It's time for Twig This Week at Google. Jeff Jarvis, Aunt Pruitt, and Matthew Ingram are here. Matthew's sitting in for Stacey Higginbotham, who's out on assignment. We've got lots to talk about. The coronavirus. San Francisco has declared an emergency. Google says we're going to stop labeling pictures with that man or woman thing and trying to trick Amazon Go's grocery store by stealing a banana. It's all coming up next on Twig. This Week in Google comes to you from the Twit LastPass Studios. Securing every access point in your company doesn't have to be a challenge. LastPass unifies access and authentication to make securing your employees simple and secure. Check out LastPass.com/twit to learn more.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 548, recorded Wednesday, February 26th, 2020. Hey, Stroop Waffle! This Week in Google is brought to you by ExpressVPN. Protect your online privacy with one click. It's that easy. For 3 extra months free with a 1-year package, go to expressvpn.com/twig. And by HealthIQ. HealthIQ uses science and data to secure lower life insurance rates for healthy people like you. To see if you qualify, go to healthiq.com/twig and take the HealthIQ quiz. It could help you save up to 41% on your life insurance premiums compared to other providers. It's time for Twig This Week in Google, a show where we cover everything going on in the Googleverse, the cloud, the internet, Windows, Facebook. Windows, why did I say that? I don't want to talk about
Windows.
Wait
a minute.
No Windows. That's Aunt Pruitt. He's got a new computer. That's pretty. You got it bent backwards. It's like a...
It's not backwards. It is a flip.
It's doing the downward dog. Something, some strange yoga posture.
Yeah, it is sort of a yoga pose.
That's an
pose,
HP flip.
Right?
What I really like is the magnetic pencil is just adhering.
Yes,
to
this
the
has
screen.
A stylus.
Nice.
Ooh, because you know how I love to use a stylus.
Yeah. So he's our creative guy.
Yeah.
Jeff Jarvis is also here. Mr. Jarvis is blah-de-da-da-ba-da-da, Professor blah-blah-blah.
I would shake your hand, but I'm not going to shake your hand anymore. I'm not going to do fist bumps. We're just going to wave.
Wave?
You know, the whole thing, as far as I'm concerned, this whole coronavirus thing is BS. And I have this in my pocket.
Are you getting ready to go mow the lawn or something? Because that's about how that's good for.
Oh, great. Oh, this is an N95 mask. This is approved by the CDC.
How did you get it?
I had it from the fires.
Very carefully.
Because it does have it is for particulate filtering. So if you're doing a lot of sanding. But I think it's also, it's on the list of approved masks for coronavirus. San Francisco today declared an emergency due to coronavirus.
Really?
But yeah, but it's not because we have any cases. It's because they want to get the money now. By the way,
oh, I see.
In the Great White North, where there is no virus, because no virus can survive, Matthew Ingram is here, filling in for Stacey, who is off doing a job today. Hello, Matthew.
Hello.
San Francisco. Well, and one of the things that concerns me a little bit is the big RSA conference is going on in the city right now. And IBM bailed. Big, big booth. They were a platinum sponsor. They bailed. So, Lisa was going to go today. I talked her out of it. But we are going to an after party for LastPass this evening. In fact, if you're going to be in the Bay Area and you're not infected... You might want to head over to
Bourbon, for that qualifier.
Bourbon and Branch. Actually, before you go to twit.tv/blog because there's a form to fill out because it's a speakeasy. That's the coolest old bar in San Francisco, and you need a password to get in. They're doing the whole speakeasy thing, so that starts at 7 o'clock tonight. If you're in the city for RSA, please. If you're,
I am going to go get some Chinese food tonight. Mm-hmm. Just to show solidarity, because what's happening all around.
People aren't going to Chinese restaurants?
Right, right,
mm-hmm,
right.
Like, that's
big,
the problem?
Big problem. Yes, it is. We had a session at Newmark J School for community media, and yes, restaurants and stores are empty. It's a huge problem.
Well, mm-hmm.
You know, the CDC is saying it's probably pandemic. It's spread now to a number of countries. It qualifies to be a pandemic.
No, there was a really good letter today from the or speech or talk from the head of WHO that said no. I tweeted it. It's up near high in my Twitter feed. That said, no, it's not a pandemic yet. And use of the word pandemic causes panic. Potentially has more implications, economic and otherwise. People can go overboard, and no, they're not ready to use it yet. They will use it if they need to. But he also pointed out that there were some number of countries where they have not had a new case in a week, and some where they haven't had a new case in 2 weeks.
Oh, that's good news.
Effort is containment. So take a deep breath behind a mask.
yeah,
Italy had 100 cases in the last 24 hours.
Yeah, they canceled Carnival in Venice. That's
Matthew and I are supposed to go to Italy soon. I think Matthew, you're going this year, right? Yeah.
Perugia. I mean, I'm going to go unless they cancel it.
Yeah.
So, the WHO director general said the epidemic peaked and plateaued in China between the 23rd of January and the 2nd of February, and has been declining ever since. So this is...
If we believe the Chinese authorities, which is always the issue. Mm-hmm.
Well, but the WHO is in there. The WHO is there.
Yeah, the WHO is there, yes.
The World Health Organization. 14 countries that have had cases have not reported a new case for more than a week, and 9 countries have not reported new cases for 2 weeks. So it does sound like maybe the worst is over.
Let's hope
sudden
so.
Increases in Italy, Iran, and Korea. Mm-hmm.
They're deeply concerning. So, yeah, I don't know. This
is a very good. So I just read this obviously when I tweeted it, but it's a really it's sobering, but it's also sober.
Yeah.
It's a good letter from the expert I would trust above all else.
Yeah. He says, don't mistake me. I'm not downplaying the seriousness of the situation, the potential for this to become a pandemic. It has that potential. But potential doesn't mean it is a pandemic at this point. Oh, I've seen other virologists say it's time to admit it. It's a pandemic, and not to scare people. That's always the fear, but to get people to be prepared, which is.
Well, I tweeted another piece that said that if the top 10 airports in the world would, I don't know how you do this, markedly increase their hand washing hygiene. It would decrease spread by a quarter to two thirds.
Wow.
I don't know how you do that. Do you put sinks out of the airport?
You do it like you do it on cruise ships. Yeah. I mean, that's what they do on cruise ships because, of course, they've had lots of problems with noroviruses. Mm-hmm. A cruise ship, it's a contained environment.
What do they
people
do on the
are
cruise
touching
ship?
Food. They put hand sanitizing stations everywhere. They stand out in front of the restaurant
everywhere.
And they say sanitize. Some cruise ships, I've been on cruise ships that have sinks and special areas for washing your hands at the entrance to the dining room.
Really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So they take that seriously. And
doesn't this give you pause?
It's sort of
when
weird
you're on that cruise ship.
No, I've never been sick. Not once. Never got sick on a cruise ship. In fact,
it would give me pause if they didn't do that.
Right.
Well, that's a point. That's a point.
And when you first leave on the cruise, most ships, they will serve food. They won't let you touch anything. Mm-hmm. Sometimes that changes after you've been out to sea for a few days. I suspect now because of coronavirus, that's the case across the board.
Yeah.
Just the whole trip, they don't let you touch the food. There's ways to do it. I wash my hands like crazy. I very rarely get sick, so maybe that's...
I wash my hands like crazy. I don't use hand sanitizer, right? I think I'm going to start.
No, in fact, they say washing's better than hand sanitizer.
It is, absolutely, but just in that moment. I don't like shaking hands. I'm not Howard Stern-like, but after I shake someone's hands, I just kind of think, what's
on? It never crosses my mind.
You know what else? And I've talked about this before, and I learned this
You're
in
much
Japan,
more sane man than I am.
Because in Japan, they don't have paper towels in the men's room, so everybody carries a handkerchief.
Right.
I carry handkerchiefs with me, and I don't touch anything. You know, I wash my hands. I dry on the handkerchief to save trees, but then I use the handkerchief to open all the doors and get out. And I don't really – I never touch anything. So
they don't have paper towels? What do they have, like
– Nothing.
Linen towels?
You're expected –
Nothing? You're expected to.
You're expected to carry a handkerchief. It's eco-friendly.
Yeah.
Separate from the one you blow your nose into, I hope.
That's the other pocket. Even though he just reached on the same side.
No, this side, the right side is the washing hand. The
color-coded.
Is color-coded. The white one is for either blowing your nose or giving to damsels in distress. Because these are really cheap. When, you can see that's actually coming yes, apart.
When you stay in hotels, do you put towels along the carpet on
No, I'm not Howard Hughes.
Or Howie Mandel.
Yeah, or Howie Mandel. No, I'm not that crazy. I try not to think about what hotel rooms are like, and never, ever do that ultraviolet light thing. That's just crazy talk.
I remember reading the number one contact surface is handrails.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's so in airplanes.
In subways.
Who is it? Is it Naomi Campbell who basically wears a mask and bunny suits because I guess she flies a lot, and then she brings with her a seat cover for the airplane seat because you can't sanitize cloth, but she does wipe all the surfaces down. And the key when you wipe surfaces down is to leave it wet for 30 seconds. And Johnny Jett, who's germophobic, he says you got to wipe the luggage. The overhead luggage handle. Everybody's touching that. And he says, never touch remote controls in hotel rooms. I said, what are you, nuts? What are you, nuts? You're a germaphobe. He says, never. I put it in a plastic bag. And I said, stop it. And so he did, and he got sick.
Oh, man.
So it's my fault.
Oh, man.
Don't listen to me, ever.
Well, I've been at cheaper hotels where they have remote controls that are advertised as germ resistant.
Right.
What's it made of? Yeah.
If you gotta say that.
Everything should be made of silver. Anyway.
Silver?
Anyway, I'm glad. That was actually silver's germ. Don't they put silver in your underwear?
I didn't know that.
Didn't Mack Weldon, our sponsor, have silver?
Not mine, I don't think.
They use silver threads because it's anti. I keep touching my face.
Yeah.
Don't touch your face, Leo.
Ever.
Ever.
At least not for now.
Until maybe after you wash your hands, you can touch your face, but then you have to wash your hands again.
And your face.
And your face. In the room.
Who's on first?
So there's a...
that's my new mask, the Bane mask. Actually, there is an Indiegogo.
I wonder whether Skype will be able to take the load.
Did you see the masks where you can print your face, the lower part of your face?
Because I'll verify this, that when I wear this N95 mask, I can't unlock my phone. But it's all you just enter the thing.
You touch your phone?
Yeah. Nobody else is touching it. It's just me.
Android.
But don't touch a surface
gestures.
And then touch your phone.
See, the Android gestures will be, you hold your phone 3 feet away from you and you gesture.
Right.
It'll be okay. Funny.
Look at this. This is an Indiegogo for
plague doctor
masks. Those creepy bird masks that the plague doctors wore. In the Middle Ages, they would stuff them with herbs and straw, thinking that the airborne particles from a plague victim couldn't... jokes on them, because, of course, it was rat bites.
What a bunch of morons.
What a bunch of idiots. But if you want, you can now get an N95 protective plague doctor mask. Wear that around. Nobody will think you're weird. Okay,
So China is having problems because everybody's working at home. The internet's not able to take it.
Oh, man, we live in dystopian times, don't we?
Well, imagine if we didn't have the internet.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking about doing all the shows via Skype in future. And in all seriousness, I was asking the staff today, should we continue to have an open studio? Anybody can come and watch our shows. We have people from all over the world.
Exciting.
We have people from Germany and the UK and Australia yesterday. And I didn't get a strong feeling one way or the other.
Just do a heat scan, before they come in.
Oh, like they do in the China airports?
Yeah, we could do that.
Yeah.
One of those little things
you
aim at your wood-fired oven to get the temperature. I could just aim it at people. Yeah. In fact, I'm going to bring
that
to the party.
The numbers are tiny.
Less than the flu. We weren't that worried about the flu.
Right.
There was a Harvard epidemiologist was interviewed in, I think it was an Atlantic piece, and he said one of the problems with this particular virus is there are lots of people who are infected who show no symptoms whatsoever.
It takes 2 weeks to show symptoms.
Yeah,
now 27 days. A guy got it 27 days after exposure.
Maybe we don't have visitors for the next 3 weeks.
No, you can come, but you have to be in quarantine for 2 weeks before we'll let you in the studio.
Yeah. Okay.
You have to
sit the parking lot.
Live in our basement.
And wear a bunny suit.
No, Mr. Burke wouldn't want you in our basement.
I'm not going to worry too much about it. I've decided if I get it, I'll get it. Mm. Not everybody dies, right?
That's
you have
the
a
other
chance.
Story. You're all going to get it.
I read that story. Rates. We're all going to get it.
Mortality rate's under 2%.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the Atlantic piece that said, you're going to get it.
It's just people over 60. Who's... Oh.
Oh. Whoops. And by the way, Leo, men are more susceptible than women.
Uh-oh.
Think of it this way. It's a 98% survival rate.
Exactly.
Yeah.
As opposed to the flu, which is a 99.9% survival rate.
Oh. So it is a little more deadly than the flu.
It's a little more.
Didn't know
it's
that.
A little more.
Yeah. I never get sick. I'm very healthy.
Oh, you just jinx yourself
and here
constantly,
comes.
Don't you? Boy, I don't do that comes. Kind of crap, man.
No, there's no. What do you
Can
think?
You knock some Leo for all of us. Knock
I don't
some.
Believe
wood,
in
you?
That crap.
Knock some. Wood. Come
no,
on.
I'm a Knock. Scientific you, person. I don't believe in that.
I'm would you go to China right now?
Yes. Do really good deals on airfare.
And hotels.
I hear the hotel rooms are really
But
inexpensive.
None of the restaurants are open. So
yeah. Yeah, I wouldn't want to go to China, but I don't know. I would. We're going to St. Louis next week. We're traveling on an airplane. Airplanes are terrible
like
for
China.
This stuff. Yeah, it's almost like China. It's got an arch. It's China with an arch.
China with an arch.
Google is notifying Google I.O. 2020 ticket winners. It's like the golden ticket in Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
And give us a check.
Oh, yeah, that too. $1,150 bucks for general admission or academic pricing, $375. Wow.
That's gone down, right? Used to be a little more expensive, I thought.
Oh,
that's seems... it was $1,500, right?
It's tied to the price of a Pixel phone.
There you go.
It's a floating index. Google in the FAQ says all IO registrants to cancel their registration will allow all IO registrants to cancel their registration up to April 15th without financial penalty due to COVID-19. Wow. That's still, you know, 3 weeks from the event. May 12th is Google IO's keynote. We will stream it, of course, live. And this is what the invitation looks like. Congratulations. You've been selected. Are you going, Jeff?
No, I'm not this year. I'm going to Leipzig to give a talk.
Oh.
For the first time I've missed in quite a long time.
Well, watch our stream.
Wow. I'm not going to go.
Yeah, we'll just stream. I'm wondering really if so the good news is if this is peaked and it's going to go away, then we could say, oh, it's like swine flu or something. It wasn't, you know, it was a tempest in a teapot. But eventually there's going to be something.
Yes.
And I wonder what the future of conferences holds.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Maybe this is also this impetus that will spur telecommuting and, you know, working at home and all that.
Actually, I came across a...
Say again?
I came across a mention of, I think it was journalists coming back from Asia. They're not in quarantine, but they've been encouraged to work at home.
Yeah, I would. I don't think that's unreasonable.
My wife today asked what, you know, she looked up and said, do we really need to stock up on food? Did she go to Trader Joe's and get lots of frozen stuff, vegetables and things?
No. Just get a bunch of beans. You can live on beans for 2 weeks.
I can live on beans. Yeah. I can definitely live on beans.
Water. And candy bars.
And water.
Are you allowed to eat beans?
I am now. I got off the keto thing.
Notice how happy he is.
You're normal again.
Notice how happy he is.
You know, I don't know what to think about. First of all, I did it for exactly a year. Today is the 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
But... and it was good for me. All my numbers were better.
Good.
I lost weight. I feel great. But I have been reading increasing numbers of articles about, it's going to kill you. You just don't know. It's a silent killer because all that meat, your arteries.
Yeah.
And bone density. I read another study. It was a mouse study, but the bone density declined and all sorts of stuff. So I thought, I did it for a year. I've got the benefit. I'm going to do a modified thing where I'd have
yeah, you just sort of changed your...
Whole
your
grains.
Lifestyle
Leo,
and thinking.
Leo, how was that first piece of bread?
Oh, so good. I started making bread. And because I wanted whole wheat. I don't want any refined, you know.
Right, okay.
So there's no white flour.
Good call.
So I'm making my own whole wheat bread, but I ate the whole loaf. It was so good. It's like, oh my God.
That's not how that's supposed to work.
Oh, sweet mystery of life, I have found you. It was so good. That is the one recommendation for going keto.
Right.
Man, that first slice of bread, you are going to enjoy yourself. I have. I did the sourdough too, because so my bread is just literally just flour, starter, sourdough, and water. There's nothing else in it. No yeast. Nothing.
Where'd you get the starter?
I made it with a little bit of yeast, a little flour, a little water, and I just fermented it over a period of time. We're in wine country, so there's a lot of natural yeast coming through the air, and so so I made two starters. One was named Bernie. And one was named Liz. And I've been watching them go up and down.
Are you serious?
Bernie kind of went crazy. Did you notice? Just, God bless America. So, no, these starters are great.
There's a guy.
They're living things on your counter. You add flour and water every morning. You feed them.
The old, that's why gold miners got called sourdoughs.
Yeah.
Because they would keep a little starter in a leather pouch around their neck.
You don't need yeast. You don't need commercial yeast. Mm-hmm. In fact, there are sourdough starters. I think Boudin in San Francisco is a 167-year-old sourdough starter.
It's there's a guy who has a museum of sourdough starters, and he got one from a woman who got it from her dad, who got it from his dad.
Because they gain character over time.
That's so cool.
My starter is very amazingly delicious. It's really good. And so that
I think you should be sending loaves to all of your hosts.
Yeah, are we going to get one?
It doesn't keep well. You really, that's why I have to eat it in the first hour.
A whole loaf.
Yeah, it makes two loaves.
What did you miss most? Was it bread or pasta or what?
No, beans.
I would kill.
I love beans.
I do too.
Beans, quinoa, I missed quite a bit. There's even brown rice is delicious. Mm-hmm. If you don't eat it for a while, it really is quite good.
I'm so glad you're normal again.
We'll see.
Is your family happy too?
Yes. Although funny, when I quit keto, Lisa went on it. So.
Oh no!
Not that she needs it.
No, she doesn't need it.
Skinny. No,
she doesn't do it. She does what she calls modified keto, which means she can have some ice cream at night.
Well, I'm on modified keto too, since I have ice cream at night.
Yeah, nothing better. I do not eat ice cream at night. Google removing 600 apps from the Play Store. This is an ongoing story. I almost don't read these anymore. Annoying ads. This isn't even a malware issue. Although
they just do it all the time.
They're constantly. Every week is another 1,000.
So why is this a story today?
I don't know.
We know.
I don't know.
Mr.
I guess the biggest, there's 3 million apps in the Play Store, so 600 is hardly anything. But I think what's interesting is it isn't for malware. It's for annoying ads. So, ads show up when you're not actually using the device. That's annoying. Or you get a surprise full screen ad when you're trying to make a phone call. That's annoying. I agree. So they're cracking down on that. They've removed nearly 600 apps. Disruptive ads enforcement and our new approach. That's why it's a story.
Yeah, this is, if there's going to be disruptive ads, they should be Google ads.
Yeah.
Would it be malware too? I mean,
well, it depends on your definition. I define
it can be.
I think it's malware if it's annoying you and you didn't install it. That's a malware. But I think technically it's not malware if you installed something, agreed to it, and you can uninstall it. Very important.
Yeah.
Then I think it's adware. Versus malware.
Well, so we remember, kids, back when we used to complain about pop-ups and there were pop-up blockers.
Wasn't that annoying?
Now every damn web page, you end up getting that much space between the things that come down, the things that come up, the things that come over, the things that won't leave, and the things that hide the X's.
So true.
It's really awful.
And when I go to Stacey on IoT and I sit there for a little while, I get a pop-up saying, "Hey, you really want to subscribe to our newsletter?" But see, I think that's okay. Let's see if it shows, because
probably already got the cookie.
She knows about this, and she said, "I'm getting rid of it." There it is.
There we go.
So is that malware, adware, pop-up? What is it?
My favorite's the one where just as your mouse goes towards the address bar, then it pops up. So if you're just on the screen, but just as you're leaving, it's like, wait.
Those are good.
Honestly. Yeah,
that's clever.
Because we're ad-supported.
Salon does that a lot.
Salon?
Yeah, Salon. Yeah. Anytime you start to leave, their page, they're like, here's an ad.
Hey, wait, before you go.
So
that's pretty clever.
I really love ads. That's what keeps us alive.
Mm-hmm.
We wouldn't be able to do any of this because we're ad supported. We don't ask people to give us money. It's free.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's also really important to be responsible about that. See, I don't mind Stacy's little pop-up there. That's not a big deal. I do, though, think what happens when you get annoying is people run ad blockers. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be bad. That's bad for, as we know, that's bad for the whole ecosystem.
You know, and a lot of pages will warn you about the whole ad blocker usage.
Oh, they say you're using an ad blocker. You know, you're taking money out of my kid's mouth.
Yeah, and I get that. Google has... then if you turn the ad blocker off and it just starts to bombard you, you know, I'm like, come on, man. I know you need to run your ad services or what have you, but there's a better way, right?
There's got
to
be. Matthew,
and Google's got ad blocking built into Chrome, right?
Now it does, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a story in the rundown in the changelog that I actually think is above changelog.
Should I take it out of the changelog and do it for reals? Okay.
It's the one where Google AI is going to stop recognizing and labeling gender in photos. Hmm.
Good, right?
So I think it's great. Yes.
It's going to what?
Stop labeling gender in photos
to avoid bias.
To avoid bias, and I also think it just says something about where society is right now. We have many non-binary students at our school. The whole notion of gender and of pronoun it cannot be intuited for people. So it's time that we just let people be whoever the hell they are. Now, that's the good news part. The bad news part is I saw just now, just minutes ago on Twitter, a woman in the UK, a black woman who was trying to submit her passport photo.
Mm-hmm.
And it kept telling her that her lips were open, violating the rules.
Oh, well, Jesus.
Her lips were not open.
Oh, God.
And so this is one good step in the right direction from Google,
AI is terrible at that.
All you could do is laugh at this.
I know.
Crap.
It's just so bad.
Yeah,
and actually, that's not overtly racist. It's just really bad AI.
Yeah. It's just bad. Dope. It's really bad coding. Yeah, it's a feature too far.
But it is, frankly, likely that the AI was trained with a lot of white people.
Right.
Exactly.
That's what it all boils down to.
Yeah, it does. It's data. The problem is not the AI, so much as the data.
Right.
Right.
Not enough people trained in that AI.
Yep.
Not enough diverse people.
Right. But the Google story I thought was just really interesting because it's done for one purpose, but it has another comment on where we are in society.
Right.
That gender becomes meaningless.
Why, you know, Google's point is, well, you can't identify somebody's gender by how they look, obviously. And why would you try to? I think that say they're a person is fine.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Human versus
human
animal.
Yeah. And some people, I can't tell whether an animal or a human. I don't know.
I've had my moments. some people do call me a beast.
You're in beast mode. That's for sure. I've seen you at the gym. That's good. Good for Google. That's the right thing to do.
I thought that was actually an important story. So thank you.
Funny though that they're making such a big deal. It's like, well, that's obvious.
Mm-hmm.
If you can't identify something by how it looks, then don't.
But I think that not many years ago at all, advertisers would say, no, we have to know gender. We're paying for it, right?
Because that's marketing.
Yeah, right. And they want to show me a picture of a woman that, you know, in the kitchen that I can use for my ad. So they need to know, because that's who they're marketing to.
Maybe presumably. We should have fewer pictures of women in kitchens.
Ooh, yeah. You think?
In ads. You know, and honestly, that's a mistake on advertisers' parts. They shouldn't assume by gender, you know, who they advertise to. That's just a mistake. Just a mistake. But, you know, that's going to be the problem because these aren't necessarily biases. These may be driven by data. Well, we just know, Leo, that 48% of women don't buy our products, so we don't want to advertise to them or whatever it is. That's data driven, and yet it comes off poorly, but you can understand the advertiser saying,
business is business.
Though. Right.
Built into rates
for
now.
Most.
Is it?
What's that?
Yeah. If you buy an ad in People, which was a predominantly female readership by the research,
mm-hmm.
And you're advertising a product that only women will buy, they kind of discount on that base. They give you a CPM based on the women you reach.
Okay.
Yes, but again, that the underlying assumption is, well, I only want to reach women, or I only
don't want to.
Yeah.
In the old days of newspapers, there were no real endemic, that is to say, category ads in sports. The thing that appeared in sports sections was tire ads, under the assumption that
men buy the tires,
and B, men buy tires, both of which are wrong.
So maybe we're doing an advertiser a favor by saying, you know, don't. It's better you don't know.
They're just people.
They're just people, and people buy your products.
Advertisers have to put things into buckets, right? And they want sort of standardized buckets.
That's right.
You know, just easier.
That's right.
Yeah, when I was making ads to show in Costco's and Walmart's, we only made ads specifically designed for women.
Really?
Yep.
You made ads to... It's Carson, our producer.
Interesting.
Who is now, you know why he likes working here. You used to make ads for Costco?
Yep. Yeah, we worked at a place a lot of tech TV people ended up at that made in-house ads for Costco and other places like that.
I explained. I was at a gas station once. And I saw Patrick Norton on the screen over the pump. Was that it?
No, but I have used Luria Petrucci in a couple of ads for Costco.
Yeah.
Formerly known as Callie.
Yes, she was Callie Lewis then.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. This seems like it's a trivial day for news. It just feels like
a little
bit. It's trivia. We'll do trying to fool. Like, this seems to me trivial. Trying to fool Amazon with a banana. So
that was not my story.
That was mine. By the way, let me get a rant out of the way first. I hate the headline.
Amazon made a bigger camera spying store.
It's not spying!
So we tried to steal its fruit. So, and this is Sam Mashkovich, by the way, who's a good friend of the network, been on many of our shows. So,
a funny story.
There is an interesting story, which is that Amazon is going to build a 7,000-square-foot Amazon Go store in Seattle. It's going to be a full-size grocery store. You go in, you scan your phone, you take whatever you want off the shelf. They actually have a sign on the cart that says, bag it as you buy it. You get to the end of the shopping spree, you pick up the bags out of the cart, and you go. That's it.
And my first thought was, easier. What about produce? So that's what he investigated.
Well, ironically, the thing is, there's plenty of humans because who's putting the produce out?
Right.
But there's just no what one thing you're eliminating is check stand. Mm-hmm. But that is a bottleneck at grocery stores. That's the that's when you're done shopping, you have to wait in line at the check stand.
It's a bottleneck in the grocery stores, but dadgummit, I don't work in the grocery store. Stop forcing me to check out my own groceries.
Well, this one, you don't even have to do that now. Right. See, we're not going to make you do that.
So you don't check out.
You don't scan anything. We'll just spy on you. Oh, sorry.
I'm cool with that. Grab my stuff, scan in and out. I'm cool with that. But the whole notion
research shows that most people agree with you, and most people do not want, like, those self-checkouts. No one uses that.
Yeah.
I hate them.
I get it if I'm just in there to grab a pack of, I don't know, a deck of cards or something, and I can just scan it and walk on out and do my thing.
Inevitably. Who buys a deck of cards in a grocery store?
And
okay, a bad example, Mr. Jarvis.
No, they may sell them.
A bag of chips.
In Vegas, they sell them.
There you go.
I have the casino on my brain. Sorry.
I'm old enough to remember when people objected to UPC. I mean,
those barcodes.
Barcodes and scanners. They didn't trust them at all.
Right. But they're so much better than the human.
Of course. But you'd stand there and you'd check to make sure.
Oh, yeah.
You know. Yeah. Folks would check and make sure.
They put that on the screen so you can look, and they go so fast.
You missed that $2 off.
Yeah, sure, looks fun.
So this is it. This is the Amazon Go store. Grab a cart, bag as you shop. So there
tries to hide a banana, which is probably a joke, but I'm not going.
Yeah, no, that's just a joke. But here's the interesting thing. It is true that they have cameras. There's cameras in the ceilings up here. I don't know if there's sensors on the shelves. There might be.
Mm-hmm.
They are looking, you know, obviously they're going to charge you for whatever you put in your cart. But I have to say, I think a lot of the value of this is the data about what you look at and don't buy.
Mm-hmm.
Or what you pick up and put back. Don't you think if you're a potato chip company and Amazon can say, you know, 43% of the people who picked up your bag of chips put it back on the shelf, you'd like to know that? Mm-hmm.
They looked at the nutrition label.
Yeah.
And said, never mind. Yeah.
So there's data here beyond what you're buying. So I think when Sam says surveillance, obviously that's a loaded word, but in a way it is. I mean, see, there's the cameras.
They're surveilling the products, not you.
They're surveilling your behavior.
Do they get you to agree to anything before you go in the store?
Wow, look at all these infrared.
Matthew, you download the app specific to these stores.
Oh, okay.
So, and I bet
there's a little click OK
that nobody reads. Yeah.
Right. There's a 56-page legal.
So Amazon Go. Let me see if it's. I've
so
got the app
despite
here.
The scandalous headline, which I'm sure Sam did not write.
Yeah, I'm sure.
This actually is really interesting because
in the story he calls it creepy.
Oh, okay. Well.
I want to know what grocery stores you guys are going to that don't have cameras on you at all.
Well, that's a good point, but I don't know if they're as
true.
Good point, Karsten.
Petaluma Market wouldn't be checking out what I'm buying and not.
Petaluma Market is constantly
a tiny little town in the middle.
They're surveilling me so I don't steal stuff off the shelf.
Yeah,
but that's different from this. I guess if you didn't want to be on camera at all, you wouldn't go to a grocery store.
So there's the store tutorial when you get there. It has a little diagram saying what not to do. And it tells you don't pick up anything for anyone else.
Oh, yeah, because you'll get charged.
You'll get charged.
Good point.
And he goes to the restroom. So this is which is really kind of cheating the test here. You know, does he hide the fruit in his backpack?
There? I feel like Sam did this last time, too, didn't he?
He did.
Yeah, he did. He's
a serial banana stealer. Okay.
So they should have him on some kind of list.
He's on the
list,
got
a control group,
is
what it sounds like.
Yeah, like Vegas.
He
also found, I almost don't want to say this, because he had a coat on. He went into the restroom. He put the coat into the... his backpack, and it didn't recognize him when he came out.
Oh, well, don't try to fake. Look, this is a convenience, not.
Well, which is.
I give him some credit for trying to do a little bit of R&D to hopefully make this experience better and more efficient.
Yeah,
you know,
he left an avocado on the table outside of the restroom, and he was pretty sure there were no cameras in the restroom. By the way,
I'm glad to hear that.
But left it there. So he did get charged for that because he only fair game.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, if you take an avocado and leave it on a table somewhere, you should be charged for it.
Yeah.
Well, robots have to go get it, put it back.
They're responsible for that avocado.
That's your avocado, buddy. What you want to do with it after you pick it up.
How does it know? How does it know? Like how many? There, we got a picture on the screen now of cookies.
How many strudels you pick up?
Albert doesn't know how many cookies. So the cookies are in a stack. There's three cookies high, right? You take one or two. How that is it? The weight? How the hell does it know how many cookies you took?
There's a lot of cameras.
There's got to be a camera.
That's pretty. Yeah. That's pretty.
I'm sure there's like a platypod inside there mounting the camera.
There's still.
He also said that in some cases when he had a complicated thing, most times the receipt comes in immediately. Sometimes it took 2 hours. So you imagine there's some room somewhere on Earth where people are replaying the videotape.
Oh, yeah. They're reviewing it. Well, at least initially, for sure. Yeah.
He said it took 4 hours for him to get the notification.
This is a good. Thank you, Sam, for doing during the work. Skynet above
Stroopwafels.
Don't you love Stroopwafels?
I love those things.
Holy cow.
I want one.
We started buying Stroopwafels for our staff.
I was going to say, I haven't seen them here in a little while.
So good.
It's a special little Dutch thing, the little chocolate cookie wafer thing that you put over your coffee when it's hot, and it kind of softens it, and the caramel softens, and you eat it with your coffee. I have not had a Stroopwafel, by the way.
Ever?
They've been missing.
That pleasure comes next.
No. Not
there.
A little
bit of goo.
Not gonna do it.
I don't think it's chocolate. I think it's caramel.
It's caramel.
It's caramel.
Yeah.
Well, you see my ignorance.
Speculoos.
Oh, I do like speculoos. Okay, I admit I had a little speculoos butter the other day.
Speculous. If you're ever in New York,
Mr. Kevin, you're killing me.
There's
its cookies, and people are mad. I am too.
Who is?
It's not that they're going to keep the Stroopwafel, but there's another cookie that I like that they're getting rid of.
Wow.
And Twitter is enraged.
How is it that I'm the fattest guy on the panel, and you guys are eating all this? I think I got a bad roll of the dice.
I got DNA. Some damn good genes. I know that.
DNA.
Gosh darn it.
Mine are Hugo Boss.
If you go to New York, go to a place called Waffles and Dingies.
Hugo Boss.
What's a dingy?
So a dingy is a thing that you put on the waffle.
It's a
Dutch word for whatever you put on the waffle.
I hadn't heard that
word. So you can put speculoos on there. You can put Nutella on there. You name it.
Hey, you know what? This price for avocados, 49 cents. That's a good deal. 19 cents for the stolen banana?
That's only if you leave it outside the bathroom. They charge you more if you...
Oh, he says, this is what they say I bought, but it's
not. Well, that's because he went around the whole thing.
He left it around. He left it by the
bathroom. He bought a banana and avocado? He's on a list, buddy. That's how you get on a list.
19 cents for a banana is not bad, though.
That's a great deal, Noah. And,
about normal, but that's a dang cheap avocado.
That's a real cheap avocado.
I think at Starbucks, they charge you $1 for each banana, don't they?
Yeah.
So what you should do is buy them here and walk them over to Starbucks and sell them to Starbucks. Sell them. Or have a little stand out front. 25-cent bananas here. Get your 25-cent bananas.
There's always been money in the banana stand.
Yeah. It's banana arbitrage. It's banana arbitrage. Buy low, sell high. Oh, my God. What are these people doing themselves?
How did you pronounce that, Matthew? Waffles dingies? And what?
Dingies.
Oh, dingies? I thought it was dingus.
Dingus. No, I think it's something else.
Oh, my gosh.
Dingies. Yeah, it's highly recommended.
It feels like...
But if it's Dutch and it's a G, isn't it?
Dichis.
Not in that particular word, I don't think.
Not in that spot? Okay.
This week in linguistics.
I honestly think, as soon as he said it, I felt like Matthew's saying this with such confidence, he's actually gone to Holland to get the...
He was saying it with confidence.
Yeah.
But he's going off the accent of a New Yorker.
True.
I feel like he asked somebody... On one of the canals Amsterdam. I did ask. Said, how do you say dinghy?
And the trusting Canadian just believed him.
Facebook is going to ban something. Thank God. They have standards. Mm-hmm. Misleading coronavirus ads. They're not going to allow people to sell cures. Oh, wow. Now they've Why got not? Some standards.
Come on. That's free. That's freedom of speech.
Freedom of speech. If you're going to...
We've got another story on that farther down. That's not breaking the First
Amendment. It's not breaking the First Amendment because it's commercial speech or something.
True that. Well, they have a right to have one. They should decide to take the one government. Down, in my view.
They're not the government.
They can actually do whatever they want.
They can do whatever the hell they want. It's tech just platforms interesting that are not bound by the First Amendment. Appeals court rules. An obvious ruling. The First Amendment refers to the government.
Yeah.
We've That's always known
Prager
that.
PragerU lost one. Yay.
PragerU sued saying you can't.
Jesus.
Yeah, it was YouTube.
Oh, YouTube took him down, and PragerU said, First Amendment. No.
I mean, it's for show, so they can act like victims. Trump campaign just this afternoon sued the New York Times over a column.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm.
Wow. Intending libel.
Yeah, it's a ridiculous lawsuit.
God, if I'd be the judge, I'd be so upset. Is there any recourse for a judge frivolous lawsuits?
Oh yeah.
Oh sure, yeah.
Just like slap.
Yeah. I don't know. You can make them pay the other party's legal expenses. I don't know if there's anything any further. Right. I think you can go after the lawyer too and their certification.
You can strongly reprimand them.
There's a XKCD on this. Of course there is. There's an XKCD on everything.
This one, I was going to say, it seems like
the First Amendment.
Everything covered.
Yeah.
Russell Monroe leaves no stone unturned. Here is his cartoon on free speech. Public service announcement. This is funny. They actually had to go to court to find this out. The right to free speech means the government can't arrest you for what you say. It doesn't mean that anyone else has to listen to your BS or host you while you share it. The First Amendment does not shield you from criticism or consequences. If you're yelled at, boycotted, have your show canceled, PragerU, or get banned from an internet community, your free speech rights are not being violated. It's just the people listening think you're an a-hole.
I don't want to hear it.
And they're showing you the door.
Is there an SKCD that explains Section 230 in four boxes?
I can ask Randall to
What's the alt text? on that one.
The alt text.
The alt text. Alt text is always funny.
I can't.
Oh, I never knew that.
At the alt text? Oh, yeah, yeah. Wow. What? I didn't know that.
Yeah, hold on. I'm trying to
get. Yeah, there's a joke. There's a hidden joke in the alt text almost every time.
It popped up and then it went away. Like, I just. What do I do? Hold the mouse over. I'm so impatient.
Stand on your left
I'm
leg.
I'm so impatient that I can't leave the mouse alone long enough for the alt text to pop up.
That's
not
nice
popping
one.
Up now. It popped up a second ago. Let's try it. Let's go out and come back in.
There it is.
I can't remember where I heard this, but someone once said that defending a position by citing free speech is sort of the ultimate concession. You're saying the most compelling thing you can say for your position is that it's not literally illegal to express. That's good.
Oh, isn't nice. That good? Yeah.
I didn't know about the alt text.
I didn't know that either.
I had no idea, Matthew. Cool. Did you find that by accident or by tip?
It's probably well known.
No, someone told me.
Oh, that's fantastic. I interviewed him on the late lamented triangulation last year, and he is great. He has a wonderful book.
Mm-hmm.
Was it called What If?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So is he funny or just wry?
Wry.
And funny.
Is he funny?
I thought he was funny.
Did he like make jokes?
Mm-hmm.
Did he? Okay.
Speaking of funny, another Facebook story, the one next up, I put that one in.
Okay.
I giggled for quite a while.
Which one?
Facebook quietly cuts off.
Filters. A reporter accidentally, TV reporter unwittingly turns on Facebook filters before going live.
Oh, jeez.
Well, what happened?
It's pretty funny. Oh,
jeez. Oh,
he gets the dog face.
So he thinks he's streaming to the channel.
A dumb weather report.
Because he didn't want to use... So he's got a hat and sunglasses that aren't real. He's got a barbell. He got his face on it. You think he didn't know it?
I don't know. WLOS. Is that Greenville?
But I want to believe, Matthew. I want to believe.
I know. It's almost too good to be true.
WLOS is near
home. Is it Greenville? Is near home?
I believe that's Greenville, South Carolina.
He's got googly eyes.
There's definitely snow. We know that.
So you think he's like, he put on, so can you do this by accident? Like you put on Facebook Live, you go stand on the other side of the camera and accidentally you hit the face mask thing?
Considering it's happened to a Pakistani government committee meeting. Yes, you can.
Yeah.
This is hysterical.
But isn't that beautiful? Wouldn't someone have told him? Like, did he not have an earpiece?
He's responding at the end. He's saying, did I have something on my face?
I know, but the first time it happened, would someone not have said?
I love the dumbbells.
Well, he's staring at the phone, just doing his report, saying, oh, snow, it collects on the ground.
He's lifted dumbbells. And then a hat comes on him, and then a beard.
The wizard one is the best.
The wizard one's definitely the best. I like the
follow-up to this story. Why so serious? Mistakes were made, but News 13's Justin Hinton reminds us to laugh it off.
Oh, yeah. Well, at least he's only a weatherman.
Only a weatherman.
Oh, I love this. He's got a... They darken him and have a flashlight. Can you imagine viewers?
They should do that all the time.
Viewers at home would love this. Oh, I'd watch.
It's much more watchable.
I'd watch this all the time.
They had a nice little
spike. In fact, Carson, can you push that button for the rest of the show? I do not have that button yet.
Mr. Kevin has something over there.
I want that button. I can do the face mask button. I got that.
Yeah, that is the newscast, the station from back home.
Oh, my goodness. Mm-hmm. You should ask your mom if she saw it.
Yeah, I will be following up.
Yeah. Do you know Justin?
She knows.
Do you know the Hinton guy? We mentioned, I think, did we mention that the Oracle-Google battle has finally made its way to the Supreme Court on appeal? And shortly before the president tweeted about it, Larry Ellison had a fundraising dinner party, raised a bunch of money from Silicon Valley.
Guess who was there?
Yeah, president was there. And the next day, he says, you know, Supreme Court, you know my buddy Larry Ellison and Oracle? I think he should win that one. Now, I normally would say, the Supreme Court would not read Twitter and pay attention to what the Twitter chief says, except that... Justice Sotomayor said, well, in fact, they do. She wrote it in a dissent. The Supreme Court ruled in favor of means testing of immigrants before they come to the United States in a party line vote. And Sotomayor, who was in the minority, wrote a dissent that said, "Hey, I just want to let you know, they're doing what the president told them what to do."
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, so, then she should recuse herself.
No. The other ones should recuse themselves.
No.
Yeah.
Trump told her.
Trump said, "Recuse yourself because you're not under my influence."
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Brilliant.
Oh my God.
You know, we laugh, but.
We laugh because we're not crying. But the thing is, I stopped. I don't read his tweets anymore, and now I didn't even know. I missed that follow-up tweet. I don't know. Where do we stand with Huawei these days? How does the president feel about Huawei? Do we know?
Not a fan.
I don't know.
Not a fan?
Muted.
Does he know them? Google is telling Huawei, okay, you can sell your phones with Android, but... do not sideload Gmail and YouTube onto your Huawei phone. They say it poses a significant security risk. We were talking about whether we should get the new Huawei Mate foldable phone for review. And I said, well, let's not, because you can't buy it in the U.S.
Right.
But on the other hand, it actually looks like a really nice foldable.
That thing that, heck, last year's, the Mate X was very, very,
very
nice. Goodness.
No, Huawei makes great phones. I had a P20. I thought this is the nicest thing ever. You know, I did notice that when I first booted it up, it said, can we send all your data to China? I thought that was a little odd.
I'm not joking.
Well, it does, in fact, have a kind of blanket. We have access to everything on your phone thing. I did ask the Huawei people. I saw the Huawei PR person, and I said, hey, what about that? She said, no, it all goes through Boston.
I think they said Germany.
It goes through Boston.
Germany
to China. Right?
Who doesn't get it?
So Huawei, Huawei can't use the Google version of Android thanks to trade restrictions.
Right.
And Google is prohibited from working with Huawei on new device models. This is actually a Google support article. Or providing Google's apps, including Gmail, Maps, YouTube, the Play Store, and others.
Is that you?
Issa Rae is telling me about Huawei. Thank you. I didn't mean to.
Nice work.
Yeah. I have a story about that, by the way, we'll get to in a second. The Play Store and others for preloader download on these devices. But Google says we've received a number of questions about the new Huawei devices launching and whether Google apps and services can be used. We want to provide clear guidance. They say it's a security issue. Side-loaded apps will not work reliably because we do not allow these services to run on uncertified devices where security may be compromised. So they say, we're not going to let it run because we don't know what the security status is of that.
Once you turn off the guard, then you're vulnerable. We did a story, I think, 2 weeks ago. The game guy who wouldn't put the game up.
That's the same thing with Fortnite and Epic.
Tim Sweeney.
Thank you.
So he was arguing that Google was all evil because Google was warning people not to load it. Well, because Google always says don't sideload.
Right. But this is going a step further. They're saying don't sideload our stuff.
Yeah, that's
right. Gmail's safe.
That's the difference.
Right.
Well, because again, it's the act of sideloading. Once you turn on the ability to sideload, it's on.
Right.
And anything can come in, and so you've ruined the protections that the phone has.
I'm glad my phone just went off because there was an interesting study just done by Northeastern University and the Imperial College of London about smart speakers. When speakers are all ears, understanding when smart speakers mistakenly record conversations. They took all the major smart speakers, including Cortana, who nobody uses.
What's Cortana?
That's the
Microsoft.
That's the video game.
Sad.
He's a Windows guy.
Is that the video game?
He knows. He's teasing.
It's in Halo.
That is sexy.
Yeah.
So there's a Google Mini. There's a Harman Kardon Invoke, which runs Cortana. There's the Apple HomePod and an Echo device, a couple of Echo devices. They did the second and third generation. And then they put them in a box with a really hot light pointed at them and a camera. And then they played 125 hours of Netflix TV shows.
The interrogation light?
Yeah. They played Gilmore Girls. By the way, the two shows that really triggered a lot of activity with the assistants were the Gilmore Girls and The Office. And they think it's because there's a lot of dialogue.
Mm-hmm. So people talk over each other, too.
Yeah. Yeah. So one of the things they said is, look, key findings. These devices, we found no evidence that these devices are constantly recording conversations. So rest assured, they're not always listening. The devices do wake up frequently, but often for short intervals, with some exceptions. The average rate of activations, again, this is not because you said the wake word, but because they were watching mm-hmm. TV, is between 1.5 and 19 times in a 24-hour day. HomePod and Cortana devices activate the most, followed by the Echo Dot Series 2, the Google Home Mini, and the Echo Dot Series 3.
So roughly once an hour.
They're not recording your conversation.
They're not.
It's just waking up.
But they are recording when they activate, and whatever conversation follows the activation. And they said several cases, the Echo second generation and the Invoke would activate for 20 to 43 seconds after thinking they heard the activation phrase. For the HomePod and the majority of the other Echo devices, 6 seconds.
That's a huge difference.
Here's the pattern on wake words. The Google Mini activations occur when the dialogue includes words rhyming with hey, like a or they, followed by something that starts with a hard G or that contains all, like cold or told. Examples include AP girl, okay, and what? I can work. What kind of? Okay, but not. I can spare, and I don't like the cold.
All of that makes perfect sense.
I can spare.
That's why I love researchers.
All of that makes perfect sense.
So much fun.
I say AP girl multiple times a day.
AP girl. Well, but apparently the Gossip Girl, that happens, I guess. I don't know.
Oh, okay.
For the HomePod, of course, with hey or hi.
Right.
Followed by something that starts with an S and a vowel. Or something that rhymes with re, as in Siri.
Faith's funeral?
Faith's funeral.
What?
So if you were going to invent a human sound that doesn't sound like a word that would trigger these things to turn on more reliably, can you imagine what that sound might sound like?
What? Like German?
Sound like German? A cough.
German. Unless you're in Germany. In which
I got it.
Yeah, unless you're in Germany.
Like schon sich recht. I can't even say it. So it baffles me why these companies don't let us say what our own activation words could be.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We should get to say our own.
Yeah, why not?
It's hard because they've got to have 87 versions of them.
Because they want
to. They did it on the Moto X 5 years ago.
Yeah, that's right.
I know. Because they want to control
Facebook
it.
Facebook is now paying people. It's on there. They'll pay you a big $5 to record your voice because they're trying to get a larger audience. <set. laughs>
I would pay good money if I could tell my Google to say, okay, Stroop Waffle.
I love our chat room.
That would be awesome. And unless you're in Holland, I don't think it's going to come up a lot.
Nope, it's not.
Maybe you could say Stroop Waffle Funeral. That would be good. Nobody would ever
credit
say
credit to mashed potato.
Mashed so potato. You got it.
So funny.
Yeah, I mean, researchers, right? I just liked it that they had to watch 125 hours of Netflix, and then they repeated it.
No,
I was just going to say I appreciate them doing that because here in the, mm-hmm. the Google side of things, it makes perfect sense when I look at scenarios in the house and those little chimes just pop up in the middle of a random conversation that we're all
the time.
Having.
It just happened here. And it's a Ray's reading me.
Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking like, well, what did it? And I think back to what one of us said and it did sort of sound like the trigger word, you know?
I remember a story, I think it was a while back and I think it was Siri, but it somehow recorded a conversation between a woman and her husband and then emailed it or texted
it
to someone. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
And when they explained it, they said, yeah, it misheard the trigger word, then misheard record this, then misheard send a message, then misheard. Like it was literally like five commands in a row.
Oh, it's not goodness. Highly likely, but if there's millions of activations every day.
Each one of those case statements failed.
Yeah.
I like Stroop Waffle. That would be a very good.
That's awesome. Trigger. Well done, chat room. Simpatico pineapple. That would be another one.
Dingies.
That's why you should be allowed to do your own.
Right.
Because you could make up something you know would not get heard.
A Google bomb.
Maybe they don't think people would be good at that.
Yeah, well, it's also like how many people wouldn't. Actually do change settings?
Right. But they could have it in there.
I've mentioned this before. My Moto X was help me Obi-Wan Kenobi, mm-hmm. and that was a really good trigger word. It never got false.
Did a test, and okay, Stroopwafel doesn't work, but hey, Stroopwafel does work.
No,
hey. Yes,
be nice.
Hey, Stroopwafel.
Hey, Stroopwafel.
Hey, Stroopwafel. Oh, goodness. Hey, Stroopwafel. Dang. You know what stopped working?
I think we got
Carson and I discovered this. I said okay, Boomer, and it triggered Google, but that stopped. Nice. I think they've actually took that out. Okay,
yeah, I got that too.
Okay, Boomer. That was
okay,
good.
Boomer.
Okay, Boomer.
It worked. It worked.
Did it?
No. Yeah, on both.
Oh,
worked on his. Didn't okay, work good. On mine. Thank okay. goodness. Thank goodness.
All three.
Sounds like
all
a,
right.
A,
this
a,
is
sounds like a Nickelback song. Hayes Troop Waffle.
Watch out. You got a Canadian on the show. You got to be nice.
This is some classic research we're conducting here.
Good stuff. Good stuff. Verizon, there was a funny rumor going around that Verizon was going to, didn't like the Pixel phones and we're not going to take the new one, the Pixel 5 or the 4A.
Mm-hmm.
Verizon was quick to say, no, that's wrong. I don't know where these things come from.
Yeah, so who reported that in the first place?
That's probably a Twitter.
I saw it first, I believe. 9 to 5 Google.
We did not repeat it.
Nope, we did not.
And I'm glad we didn't. Sometimes I... Yeah, well, no, Android
probably
Police.
On the rundown.
No, Android Police. Android That's where Police. I saw it first. And then as you read down, they stuck an update in there to said, hey, no.
Yeah, update and retraction. Good. Yeah. You know what?
There you go.
There's a word you don't hear a lot in modern journalism.
Good on you.
Retraction.
Good on you. Oh, good for them.
Yeah.
All right.
Good on you.
They said our report... our source was working, we believe, with inaccurate, unreliable, or outdated information. That's not... You know what? I give them credit, because you can get stories wrong, but if you properly update and retract, and you don't bury it, but you put it right there in the headline...
This increases your credibility.
Yes.
Right. It came in my news feed, whatever news feed I was reading, the original headline, so I clicked on it and read through it, but I got about, you know, 2/3 through it and saw that there was an update in the bottom of the article that said, hey, our sources don't seem to be reliable, yada, yada, yada.
Good.
You know, but Bravo. It's nice to see that they updated the head, too.
Bravo, Android Police. That's the right way to do it.
because of Brexit.
Yeah. I was looking at
Google
that story. I don't know
is
how to,
shifting your data.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Out of the UK into the US because they're not going to be under GDPR necessarily, and they don't know what is going to happen in the UK, so they got to go to a place where they actually know what the law is.
Oh, that makes sense.
So that's going to be a lot of data, right? How do they just move it?
On a ship, I think.
I do see a picture of a ship, but I can't. Believe
is that the ship with the data?
I'm
going to
do that.
It's full of data.
It sank.
what were those old? Oh God! What were those? What were the brands of those carts you used to put in the machine? Those square?
Not the zip drives.
No. Zip drives. Zip drive. Yeah,
this is 8 million zip drives.
Yeah,
I remember a guy from NASA at a GigaOM conference saying that the only way that they could share data from some of the telescopes was to put hard drives in a box and put them on a UPS truck and ship them to someone because there was no bandwidth fast enough to transmit, you know, petabytes of data.
Do what you got to do.
Actually,
the sneaker net.
Reed Hastings, a founder of Netflix, tells the story that his college computer science professor asked him, which has more bandwidth, a fiber optic cable across the country or a truck carrying 20,000 DVDs?
Mm-hmm.
And when they did the math, it was the truck.
Right.
It was the truck. Oh, yeah, for sure.
So and he had the insight, oh, you know, maybe we should mail DVDs instead of them making people download them. However, that's changed. Because now everybody's got enough bandwidth.
Not NASA.
Not NASA,
of all people.
Yeah. So kind of a cute story. Actually, apparently the story's changed over the years, so I don't know how accurate it is. It's a good story, though. It's a good story.
Shouldn't let facts get in the way of a good story.
No.
No.
What else? Gosh, I don't know why. Maybe it's me. Maybe I'm getting ready for coronavirus.
Oh, this is the one I like.
Okay, maybe I need some carbs. I don't know what.
Twitter is real life.
Carbs.
Twitter is real life.
Yeah, Charlie Wortzel's column.
Yeah.
Rare moment of tech positivism in the New York Times.
Clickbait.
I can't even click it. I'm typing it.
As someone who wrote an optimistic book, I can tell you that optimism never sells.
No.
There's Bernie. So, for the better part of a year, I've been hearing the same refrain. He writes, friends, colleagues, peers, and respected pollsters have cautioned, Twitter is not real life. I think I'm one of them. I've been saying that for a long time. I disagree with this, Charlie says. In one reading, the Twitter isn't real life mantra is perhaps a laudable attempt at self-reflection by the media and the political elite, but there's also a separate, less charitable reading of the phrase as it's deployed by the pundit class as a clever bit of misdirection intended to make elites seem in touch while they protect their power.
Exactamundo.
Is that what you're saying to me? That I'm just...
Uh-huh. You're a scared elite trying protectionism for your great power.
That's the nicest thing you've ever said, Jeff. Wow. If only it were true.
Nicest thing you ever said.
So, yeah, we've seen other pieces, even in the New York Times, saying, the Arab Spring, there's lots of, giving black Twitter, giving people who don't normally have voices
have a
chance to speak is important. Mm-hmm. And yes, and there are lots of people on the other side as well.
The thing is, it's both.
It's right? both. I think that's the
problem with, it's like anything the internet touches. It enables all the good stuff and all the bad stuff at the same time.
The other problem with the analysis is that people try to act like they use a media analysis to act as if the total usage of Twitter reflects something. It's not. Mm-hmm. It's a bunch of individual voices you can finally hear. The agglomeration is meaningless.
But isn't that what the media often does, which is say, oh, my gosh, people are really upset about the red dress versus the blue dress when it's just a bunch of yeehaws on Twitter.
All right.
Yeah.
It's not a story.
Do you remember when
it's a buzz?
When they would write, people would say, the word such and such has been searched this many times on Google, or if you search it, you get this many results, like that showed anything.
Right. There's a million pages about this word.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love it when our local TV, they'll put a video on that they got off like College Humor or Reddit or something, and they'll say it's gone viral, and it'll have like 3,200 views or something.
This piece, I'm guessing, and I haven't read it yet, so I correct me if I'm wrong, Jeff, is really a defense of Bernie Sanders. Right, and of his grassroots movement on Twitter, and the media elite's rejection of Bernie Sanders, saying, "Oh well, don't believe the fact that he's got all this grassroots support on Twitter. Doesn't mean he's going to get a lot of votes."
Yeah, that's kind of a subtweet.
I think it's partly that. I think it's partly that.
But he's also saying
that there are lots of influential people who are on Twitter, and they help shape the discussion that then actually makes things happen. So in a real way, it is real.
But that's why that's why it's both. It is media elites saying Bernie, is overblown, and then it's a lot of Bernie supporters saying, no, Bernie's the greatest thing ever. It's all of that.
Yeah. Right, yeah.
And so it would be, I think it's a mistake, especially because you only see the things you follow on Twitter.
Exactly.
Say, I'm putting my finger on the pulse of America. That's clearly not true.
Right.
It's not even the pulse of Twitter because it's just who you follow.
Well, then again,
but
even
it's also
if
complicated.
Is Twitter, you still have that, what is that, trending column or whatever it is that they're constantly trying to put in your face when you open up the app. So I don't necessarily follow that stuff, but I'm always being.
I was just going to say the algorithm. Unless you constantly tell it to only show you the latest tweets, which you have to do over and over and over, the algorithm takes over and it starts showing you things that it thinks you'll be interested in. So you're not even deciding what to say.
Well, here's an interesting thing. I just went to my Twitter stream, and instead of just showing general trends now, it's showing trends for
trends
me.
Trends for you, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So now that's, I see a gear too, so can
just based on your location, I think.
So I can uncheck that, and yeah, who I follow, so I'll uncheck that. And now what
it,
I want
gives
is...
gives me the NBA. I have never in my life read a story about
exactly.
Basketball.
Exactly. That's what I'm talking about. I have things muted and okay, blocked or whatever.
So I made a mistake. Stuff. I said I wanted global trends, and all I'm getting is soccer.
That's global.
I mean, literally, I am, it sounds like I'm making a joke.
That's global.
Soccer, 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 soccer. Mm-hmm. And then a thing saying you should call it football.
Stories? That's all that's important.
Apparently, let me go to what other country? Jeez, that's the big worldwide trend. Let me go. I would want to follow the United States trends, right? And not trends just for you. Soccer, soccer, Major League Baseball, yeah, and the coronavirus.
Coronavirus.
The okay, coronavirus is so number four.
Do these,
wow,
in your opinion, gentlemen, are these actual like statistical trends, or is it somewhat curated and curried?
I'm betting they're pushing some of them.
Okay.
Like, they may even have a deal with the Champions League. I don't know.
Mm. I can report the trend. This trend is about soccer. Why don't I have that? Okay. Well, maybe I do want to go back to tweets trends for me. This seems new though, because I used to see just a list of trends by geography.
Every time I open the mobile app,
it's different.
It pops up with that. So, mess, and I'm like, I don't care about any of this
trends
stuff.
For me, see, they know me better.
They're just trying to help, you know,
a shooting in Milwaukee.
It's not helping when I actually have a mute word.
I know,
Trump.
I know.
Do you get Trump in your trends?
And Trump is the thing that
is
pops
in your
up.
Trends?
Like, come on, who's reading this?
Twitter, I've come around to
I
the point
you
of,
need to know.
Of view that it's just this is an amusement. This is just an amusement, Twitter,
right?
Don't take it seriously. Sometimes I read and I go, oh, people are awful. But most of the time,
I still have, you know, a handful of people that I care about on Twitter. And you, know,
you have great conversations. I see what you, and you're going back and forth. Mm-hmm. And he's always fist bumping.
He's a
going
nice
on.
Man.
You know,
well, what am
people,
I?
People respond to that. Well, no, yeah, you know, you're like me. You're an a-hole.
You're more like a pork chop.
I don't actually, I long ago learned never to say anything on Twitter. Like, just, I'm completely anodyne on Twitter. It's like, oh, yeah. Maybe that's why. I don't know. There's nothing
you're
you can't.
People, they're mad at you
there's
for
there's nothing you can do. No, no. You tweet too much, they drop you.
Yeah.
You tweet too little, at least they don't know you're there.
That's so true.
I came across a great essay, actually, at Ribbon Farm, which is a blog you should check out. And it was about how Twitter is an example of what this guy calls the internet of beefs. And
yeah,
all it is people who have a beef. And yeah, unless you are 100% in alignment with them, then that's a moral failing on your part and they need to attack you. So there's no room for nuance. It's just
also,
people looking for a fight.
Yeah, and also the activist champions of Twitter. Mm-hmm. There's a whole lot of activism on there, but no action.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Hashtag I'm upset, yeah. You know. But then there's...
I used to say the classic Twitter was, I would say, I love pancakes. And the first response is, why do you hate waffles?
There it is.
And then there's this. Turn on my audio.
Oh, the best.
Oh, man, yes.
Okay, we're going to get pulled off of YouTube for this, but it's worth it. It is apparently a sea otter. It looks like he's actually eating the phone, but instead they're saying he's playing the saxophone.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh.
That's awesome.
Okay. A little hairless whisper.
Why does someone have a sea otter in their living room?
Is that a sea otter? What is it? What is this animal? What? It looks like a sea otter.
It does look like an otter.
I need to know more about
it. Is it an otter?
It's clearly an otter.
I don't think it's okay to own otters.
Shouldn't it be in water?
Like, maybe it's not a sea otter. Maybe it's a land otter.
There's no such thing as a land otter.
It's a sea otter. There are river otters.
Where is the sea?
It's a land otter.
All right. Call the SPCA.
So, yeah, that's a sea otter.
There.
Yeah.
That's where
so I look up on Google, and yeah, I see, is otter a good pet? Answer. Otters are frequently described as ferrets on crack, and for good reason.
Chat room says it's a river otter.
That is our algorithms at work,
still,
folks.
It's not a living room otter. It's not a, suburban, a living room otter. You know,
but it does play a mean saxophone.
All right.
Otters are frequently described as ferrets on crack and for good reason. So you can't even legally own a ferret in California. So an otter must be right out.
Ferrets they must be really mean because ferrets are pretty mean.
Jeff, am I mistaken? So we have a Super Tuesdays this coming Tuesday. We're voting in California, and I have I can't vote. I'm waiting to see.
Why?
I want to see what happens until Tuesday. Normally, I have a mail-in ballot. Yeah.
Okay, now
I want to see what happens in South Carolina. Yeah. Is that stupid? I'm like I want to vote for the winner.
I have my Kamala hat in with black mourning around it,
yeah.
And then I have my Cory hat with black mourning around it. Now I have my Warren hat,
yeah.
But right now I'm gonna get ratioed for this. The person I do not want to win the nomination is Bernie. So Biden, who I had no enthusiasm for whatsoever, end up voting for Biden in your case. Yeah.
Why not Bernie?
Bernie. I decided I'm just going to get over it. I'm going to like Bernie. That's just the way it is.
And it is what it is.
Right? It is what it is.
It's not just about liking. It's about fearing what else happens. Chris Hayes had a really good piece the other night on his show trying to argue that the data doesn't back up these fears, but I still don't buy it.
Nothing Bernie is saying is weird. You know, it's the word socialist, unfortunately. That's really – people say, oh, he's a communist. He's a socialist. He's Fidel Castro in a – ill-fitting suit, and everything he said. Well, he kind of does look like Larry David. Everything he says is perfectly legitimate. It's not like he's advocating the He's not even saying let's take over AT&T, which I might support. To be honest with you,
it's just public health care for Christ's sake.
No, but it's the question. The question now is winning. So this whole argument of likability.
That's where I feel
that
guilty.
Women. They only use that word against women.
Likability. You should smile more.
Electability. Yes, likability too, but no.
All right, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to get all political on you. I just wanted to get...
Yeah, you brought it up. Let's let the record show.
I want to know if I'm being craven by waiting to see how everybody else votes.
That's what we always do.
But the risk is that you're playing a sort of horse race game where you're trying to, game the results, and then you want to vote for the winner, not the person that you actually support.
No, I want to vote for Amy.
I'm not sure.
But I don't want to throw away my vote. And I think at this point, after the debate last night where everybody was at each other's throat, I thought it might be good if we just got rid of all these other people, pick one person, doesn't matter who, and just all get behind that one person.
There was a debate last night?
Yeah, you're glad you didn't see it. It was savaging each other.
A Twitter debate.
It was a Twitter debate. And there's a great picture of Amy standing here while Tom Steyer's screaming at Joe Biden. They're screaming at each other. She's in between going like this. And it's depressing.
There should just be a big cage match. They should just all get in a cage.
It is.
That's another one.
Six politicians enter, one leaves.
That's literally what it is. There's no cage, but it's a virtual cage.
That's another one of my mute words, debate.
Debate? So, you want to know anything about it, huh?
Mm-mm.
Don't you want information?
What's left for you? It's like when I go in and order the burger without this and without that. Why don't you say, what is your Twitter just basically kittens?
Almost. There's a couple dogs, too.
That's the people who always say how much they love Twitter, people like you. Right. Basically, you're not seeing Twitter.
Yeah.
Google, I already did that one. Only reason I'm bringing this stuff up, I got nothing to say. I got nothing here.
Are you well?
That's not true.
Oh, I got coronavirus.
Come on, you nothing to say?
I got the plague.
There was another good Twitter one there actually about them trying to test new ways to fight misinformation.
Yeah,
they're thinking about not just badges on things that are misleading, but a kind of community based point system. I'm not sure any of this is going to work.
Well, that's my. You know, so there's a story like this every freaking week. Twitter's thinking of all the text being upside down.
I know.
And it never happens.
It usually never happens. I know. That's a fair point.
It's like, I don't even... we're exploring a number of ways to address misinformation and provide more context for tweets on Twitter.
Yeah.
I actually
saw a comment from someone who studies disinformation, and they said this would actually be... the worst thing to do. That when you flag something and show that it's misinformation, it actually makes the problem worse.
We know that because Facebook tried it.
Yeah.
And we know that. And that what got shared the most? Misinformation.
Misinformation did.
Yeah.
Twitter's rolling out, supposedly, the new continue thread option. So you don't have to use that stupid spool of thread.
Sign or whatever.
No. Jeff is of the opinion that lots of people put a spool of thread on their tweet before they do a thread. I've never seen it, but he says it happens.
They do. All the
time.
Because
I'm a leader.
You're a thought leader.
I've never seen that.
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you, Matthew. You're coming back.
He's coming back.
So I don't actually, this is an interesting. First of all, I feel like Twitter should not encourage these massive tweet storms. They're not a good way to post your thoughts.
Oh, well, I've seen brilliant.
That's what a blog post is.
Yes,
for.
But put them on the on Medium or something.
That's
what
a blog post is. Where the nobody, people does are. Jeez, nobody does you that. Nobody does that. Try to control the world.
You got to put it where let people it are.
Let it's it the be. Worst yeah. possible platform for no, a long not. Form thought.
I think once it gets to 100 or 200 tweets in a thread, I think that's probably a little over
yeah,
the top.
Yeah, that's an essay. That's a book. Yeah, you're right, Matthew.
Yeah.
That's only what 2,800 words. No, 28,000 words. Yeah, that's an essay. So you like this idea to have a button. So what happens is if you post a tweet and then you post another tweet referring to that tweet, they'll give you a button that says continue the thread.
Mm-hmm.
Do you like that, Jeff? Is that a good idea?
TweetDeck already. Yeah. TweetDeck already gives you
that. You don't know
that,
because you quit Twitter before the threads were invented.
I quit Twitter before the hashtag.
There weren't even any at symbols.
We didn't. Does Chris Messina still get? He gets credit for creating the hashtag, doesn't he? I think he should.
Yes.
Well,
yes.
No.
Who?
Yeah.
He.
That's a real range of reactions. Yes.
Wait a minute.
Well, who?
No, Chris the name Messina. You said. I didn't hear the name you
Chris
said.
Used Messina. To work at Google. Chris Messina.
He is the first to use the hashtag.
But he repurposed the hashtag.
I thought it was something else, though.
From like IRC, right? So it wasn't, he didn't invent it.
No, but he was the first to use it on Twitter, and Twitter incorporated
it. Yeah, he was, yeah. He was.
Oh, okay. I thought it was someone else.
Did you love...
I remember when Ev Williams got so mad at me, I wrote something about Twitter, and I said that all the best ideas had come from users. Like the at symbol
really
and the retweet and the...
That's a good thing.
Well, I was going to say, is that a bad thing?
No, it's a great thing. But I was saying that Twitter didn't actually come up with a lot of the great things about the service, that it was users that came up with it, and then Twitter just implemented them, and he got all mad because it was like I was saying he wasn't smart enough to come up with good ideas about Twitter. Man.
Insecure much, Ev Williams? Jeez.
Crap, I forgot the ads. All right, let me do a break. That's why I've been a little at sea. Because we haven't had ads in so long, and then I forgot to do them. Sorry about that. We'll be back.
Smoke them if you
can. You know how I know it? Yeah, the chat room wants to go to the bathroom. Our show today brought to you by ExpressVPN. You can only go to the bathroom if you're already using ExpressVPN. The rest of you sit in your seats. You need to know this. This is how you protect yourself online. Privacy and security. ExpressVPN, a virtual private network, encrypts your traffic from your computer to the ExpressVPN server so your ISP can't spy on you. The guy in the coffee shop in the hoodie can't spy on you. People can't inject ads into your stream. No man in the middle. It's a really good technology, long-standing good technology. But there is a caveat. Maybe you're just kicking the can down the road. Maybe the guy in the coffee shop can't spy on you. Your ISP can't spy on you. But you've got to trust where your traffic emerges on the internet. They have the same access that all those other people have. That's why it's so important you choose the right VPN provider. Well, here's what you want. And we've talked about this on Security Now. Steve Gibson said this. You want a VPN, besides one that obviously is using the latest technology that's secure, that doesn't log your data. They're not keeping track of it. And honestly, that's how those cheap and free VPN providers make money. They log your data. They sell it to the ad companies. ExpressVPN does not. In fact, they are so committed to your privacy, they developed a technology called Trusted Server. When you press the button, you can ExpressVPN up on Mac, Windows, Android, iOS, Linux, wherever you are. There's a great big button on the app. You press the button. You're now going to a VPN server. It spins up a new copy of the VPN server. You use it. As soon as you log out, it spins it down. The whole time that server is running, they call it the trusted server technology, it cannot write to the disk. It cannot write to the disk. So it, even if they somebody wanted to log your behavior on ExpressVPN, they couldn't. They couldn't. The other thing that's great about ExpressVPN, it's fast. So fast you can use it, and I know a lot of people do. I've tried this. It really works. To log into another country. So let's say you're a Netflix customer in the U.S. You want to use Netflix in Japan. So you choose the ExpressVPN server in Japan. Now you can watch Japanese Netflix. You're not stealing it. You're a subscriber, but you can watch Japanese Netflix because there's no geographic restriction anymore. Fast enough, you can actually watch HD video. And I've tried it again and again. Many other VPNs are too slow to watch video, not ExpressVPN. So you can eliminate geographic restrictions, protect your privacy, protect your security, stream HD quality video. And it's just so easy. You fire up the app, you click the button. If normally it'll pick the server nearest you, but if you want to be in another country, you want to watch Netflix in Canada, I'm not the only one who loves ExpressVPN. Tech Radar, The Verge, CNET, many other tech experts rate ExpressVPN number one in the world. In every respect, this is a great service. 30-day money-back guarantee. Give it a try. We actually have a great deal for you. Go to expressvpn.com/twig. You'll get a 3 extra months free on a 1-year package. expressvpn.com/twig to learn more.
Chrome OS is really easy to set up on there, too.
It is great. I use
ExpressVPN.
That's kind of neat that you can do that on a Chromebook. Mm-hmm. I love that.
It's pretty mm-hmm. slick.
Yeah. expressvpn.com/twig. So this is an example of why, you know, we were talking about Clearview AI,
mm-hmm.
how they have been scraping faces from Facebook and everywhere else. And
that old chestnut.
Yeah, and then offering face recognition yeah. technology to law enforcement. And they said, no, we don't. We only give it to law enforcement. It's only mm-hmm. legitimate law enforcement. No, it's secure.
Right.
An intruder accessed its entire list of customers. Someone got access to, I mean, this is why you can say, oh, no, we're secure. The servers were not breached, but they did get on all the customers, the number of user accounts those customers have set up, the number of searches the customers have conducted. If I were law enforcement, I might be a little miffed. Clearview, security is Clearview's top priority, said Tor Eklund, an attorney for the company. Unfortunately, data breaches are part of life. Oh, this is the new defense. That's normal. Oh, this happens.
It just happens.
Come
These
on.
Things happen.
You know, what can you do?
Come on, Leo.
There's nothing you can do.
You're going to get attacked. Deal with it.
Nothing you can do.
Things happen.
So maybe there's a good reason why you wouldn't
Nobody's
want a company
fault.
To have 6 billion pictures of everybody in the United States, 3 billion pictures of everybody in the United States. Maybe there's a reason.
They also said they worked with a bunch of law enforcement that turned out they didn't. So they were in their marketing, and then yeah. someone called them and were like, yeah. did you use this? No.
Yeah. And who was it? Was it Kashmir Hill? That they were, it was a good piece on The Daily. They interviewed her about her coverage of New York Times of Clearview. And among other things, apparently they have a flag. So she had a friend in law enforcement, and she said, "Search, here's my image, search for it." And they couldn't right. find her.
Right.
And eventually really? She talked to the founder, and he said, not only could it not find her, Clearview then contacted that law enforcement officer and killed his account for letting a reporter use it.
Yeah, that's what I remember.
Oh, we don't know who you are.
It was for searching for reporters.
Searching for reporters.
Mm, yeah. Right.
Oh, yeah, that's it. So he said, the founder said, that was a bug. That was a bug. We couldn't find you. And so she gave him her picture and found her. Lots of them.
A bug.
It was a bug. Samsung has admitted there was a data breach. A number of us got weird unsolicited texts with a number one on our phone, a mystery push.
What's the frequency, Kenneth?
Isn't that weird? In this case, we found out, in fact, Samsung says a small number of users could read other people's personal data following last week's unexplained Find My Mobile notification. That's weird.
Was it about one, like 150 or so?
Yeah.
It's a small number, but
it's
still.
Not, yeah. It's not good. So Samsung said, a technical error.
Yeah. Shocking.
This is what happens in the 21st century. It's what happens. Nothing you can do about it. Nothing you could do.
We had a case of the Mondays. That's all.
I love that. That's my new defense. Hey, it's the 21st century. Get over it. What do you expect?
Things happen.
Yeah, breaches happen.
We're digital now.
We're all digital.
It's an imperfect world.
Yeah.
Things break.
Yeah.
All right. I have news. You seem a little down, Leo. I have news that's going to brighten your day.
Please.
Now, would have brightened your day a lot more when you were still on the keto diet.
Uh-oh.
Oh, boy.
Uh-oh. Today.
Does it have to do with Dunkin' Stroop waffles? Oh, even better.
Released bag of bacon.
Yes, I saw that.
What?
Wait, I saw that.
The Dunkin' bag of bacon.
The Dunkin' bag of bacon. 8 half strips, which they point out to you is equivalent to 4 full strips.
Yeah.
Because they were half.
It's in a bag?
Yes.
It's in a little bag. There it is.
Oh, that doesn't look like good bacon.
No, because it wasn't just fried. You know, it was fried about 3 months ago.
It'll be fine. I'd take
it. What are those flakes?
I'd take it.
Ant reveals his standards.
Yes.
If it's bacon, what more do you need to know?
I'll bet while you're eating it, if you eat part of the bag as well, you wouldn't notice.
Nope.
Whoa.
Still good though, damn it.
Do you think that's for
like Timmy's is going to be any better?
Do you think they did this for keto
people? The whole bag
to get the keto people in the door?
Maybe
have 8 pieces of bacon.
Maybe.
Yeah, I imagine
because they're not coming in for the donuts.
How do we get the keto people back?
They're not coming in for donuts.
What can we give them?
A bag of bacon.
What about a donut, but it's made out of meat?
Ooh, a meat donut. Now you're cooking with. Oh, that's pepper.
That's a lot of pepper on there.
Well,
no, that's just for product photography.
They got to do something to get a flavor, Matthew.
That's just for product photography.
Yeah, it's probably not. It's probably like copper.
It's not even meat. It's made out of cardboard.
Yeah, the whole thing. You should do a hands-on photography. Your great show about photography. You should do one on food style.
Do it.
And the things that they do. Yeah. Like instead of maple syrup, they use motor oil.
Yeah. Motor oil. Yeah, motor oil.
That would be a good...
Yeah, because actual food doesn't really look that tasty.
It doesn't hold up that well.
It actually doesn't look very good.
It never does. It takes nice props and nice lighting.
Sleeve for on-the-go snacking ease.
Yes, of course. You don't want to get your hands all shiny and greasy.
Sweet old Tim Hortons takes over.
Is there anything wrong with Mike Bloomberg? He's got a lot of money hiring... people for $2,500 a month to post on Twitter. And now apparently he's hired a comedian to write him material.
Yeah. Somebody said
Gilbert Gottfried.
Oh, man, yes.
I'm Mike Bloomberg, and I approve this message.
And worse.
It's interesting that Twitter took down 70 accounts because it said it was basically coordinated inauthentic behavior.
I have so much coordinated inauthentic behavior.
Facebook is 100% totally fine with it.
Yeah. Oh, I've reached my free article limit.
Uh-oh.
Oh, no.
Hiring influencers, though, I guess that's no different from them hiring somebody else just to do the marketing campaign, but they just happen to hire the best of the best, if you will.
But you got to be transparent about it.
Be upfront about it.
Especially if they're all tweeting exactly the same phrase, as you can see they are.
Yes.
There was one guy, I think it was on Instagram maybe, and he posted something up positive about Bloomberg, and then the very next message was, just ignore that, vote for Bernie.
The check cleared.
Yeah.
Ads made by influencers on behalf of politicians, says Facebook, will be allowed on the platform so long as they're labeled as ads. But
they don't go in the ad library.
Right.
They don't go in the ad.
So you can't review them as you can all the other election ads.
Right.
Apparently, they have no policy on influencer marketing.
Of course they don't.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. The Federal Elections Commission has no policy. Even worse. The FTC has rules about it. You know, you have to put, if I tweet something.
If you get free lipstick, you got to say something.
Yeah, or if I tweet something about ExpressVPN, I have to have a hashtag sponsor. Or,
right.
hashtag ad or say our sponsor ExpressVPN, which I always do.
Yeah, I usually do.
Yeah, if you forget, okay. But that
usually,
but the FTC will
find
you. Yeah, you do it all the time.
I'm almost perfect, I'm telling you.
If there is an FTC fine for that and all that, and so we instruct all of our people about that. But the FEC, the Federal Elections Commission, has no policy. Influencer posts can be fact-checked on Facebook unless they contain the speech of a politician, in which case, of course, they can't.
They can't.
Well, so this gets further interesting.
That's
today.
So
is
clear.
Obama
yeah, it's so
is,
clear.
Yeah, this is kind of ridiculous, I will confess. Though, let me stay on this for a second. So in the ads database, everybody is very frustrated that they don't give you the targeting criteria that were used.
That's what you'd really like, yeah.
Exactly. Well, so then I heard a discussion that said, well, problem is, if Mr. Ant Pruitt comments or interacts with a given ad, and I can see that, and then we know what targeting was used for that ad, then it identifies those criteria to Mr. Pruitt.
Oh.
And as a privacy problem.
Yes. Data, data, data.
Yeah. So the other story today is that Obama is trying to get the networks to stop airing a Trump ad that is misleading, but the networks do not censor, wrong verb. But
yeah, they're not allowed.
They're not allowed to. So you have the former president telling the network, asking the networks to take something down, and it's going to be very interesting to see what happens.
So they do in some cases take them down, but it has to be really, really extreme. So it'd be interesting to see whether this is going to, you know, make them, like, be extreme enough for them to do it.
I mean, the cable networks can take them down. They're not under the rules, but the broadcast networks.
Then there's this Swiss court that says clicking a like button could be a crime if it's to spread hateful or defamatory content.
Ooh.
What do you think about that?
Scary.
Is that going too far in the other direction?
Mm. Yeah.
Mm, it seems to be. They're technically right. You distribute it by liking it.
Do you? You kind of you bump sure you it do. Up in the algorithm?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, technically, you don't do anything. Facebook does it, but...
Oh, based on the signal. Got it. Yeah.
We've got to grapple with freedom of expression.
It's challenging.
And it affects... So today, Toby Young, who's a very controversial media figure in the UK, he's conservative, pro-Brexit, all that, he started something called the Free Speech Union. And The Guardian had a rip-roaring laugh at this, and I get why. So you pay money, and £49 regular rate, £250 full rate. And he says that they will, if somebody goes to your boss and says, Jeff shouldn't have tweeted that, as has happened. They will send letters to the boss saying, remember, Jeff has freedom of expression, and that matters. So it's a weird kind of service.
Seems like it's so much gray area around a lot of this stuff, too, one way or another.
Yeah. It's all gray areas. Yeah.
It's the complaints about the right wing saying that their speech is being violated and sometimes comes off as rather disingenuous. But on the other hand, we've got to get used to speech. I was at a conference in May, a great conference, the Camden Conference in Camden, Maine, this weekend speaking. And one of the people on stage, someone at a major university in the United States, said that the First Amendment is outmoded, which made me want to just scream. And
What do they propose in its place?
Well, they're just going to say, I see this from other academics these days. Do we have too much speech?
No. Yeah. No. Be careful what you wish for.
You know, and I'm going through my Luther and, there are people. So one thing I mentioned up there in 15 something, a printer had his right hand cut off because he had dared to print a criticism of the Queen's marriage.
Wow.
His name, unfortunately, was Mr. Stubb.
That's terrible. Not going to laugh at that.
Rimshot.
True.
That's terrible.
It's true.
So I have been for recently, if last say year, saying, because I was a big proponent of PGP and encrypting email, but I think I've gotten saw the light finally that after a number of exploits took advantage of poorly designed PGP implementations and so forth, that the whole notion of email just cannot be secure, that you should always think of email as potentially exposed. And so what I've been telling people who ask me, in fact, I just didn't ask the tech guy about this. The guy had a BlackBerry. He said, okay, now that BlackBerry's gone, what else can I use for secure email? And I said, well, I don't know if it was ever that secure. But, and email has its own problems. And I recommended Signal Messenger. I said, if you really, the only easy way to have secure messaging is not email, because metadata leaks. There's no forward secrecy.
Yeah.
There's all sorts of problems with it. But Signal, and there are others like it's it.
Keybase, is that another
Keybase
one?
Keybase is very good. Signal is open source, uses perfect forward secrecy, does everything right. Moxie Mollenspike is very trustworthy. And actually, it's kind of funny. Brian Acton, who was the founder of WhatsApp, sold it for $22 billion to Facebook and then left Facebook because he didn't like the commercialization they were contemplating.
And he put money into Signal.
He put about half a billion into Signal.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah,
and they're hiring staff. He was on a different page
from Facebook.
They're
putting stickers in. They're trying to make it more appealing to real
people. I would say Signal is the best.
I love Signal. The only negative, and there's Edward Snowden. He loves
Snowden,
it too.
Snowden, of course.
The only, and as well as Bruce Schneier, another great security guru, and Matthew Green, this cryptographer at Johns Hopkins. So that's a pretty good, and Laura Pincus, who is, of course, Snowden's biographer, I guess, or documentarian.
Poitras,
did I say? Yeah, Poitras. The only bad thing about Signal is tied to your phone number. Now you could get an anonymous phone number, but I don't like it that it does it that way. There are other choices. Right. Perhaps to look at. But the EU has just told its staff, the EU Commission, switch to Signal. Signal has been selected as the recommended application for public instant messaging. I wish they would say for all messaging, including email. So that's very encouraging. I think it's very encouraging. I'm glad to see that.
I don't recall Signal having a web interface the way Keybase does. You know, you can use Keybase on your mobile device, but you can also download and install an
Signal
actual app.
Has a desktop app, but you still have to unfortunately tie it to your phone.
Yeah. To your phone, yeah.
And you can only have 5 devices besides your phone. And I think that has to do with the security.
Model. Yeah, that makes sense.
But you can't. I do have Signal on my desktops as you know, the ones I use most of the time, as well as on my phones. Yeah.
I've used Keybase, and over the last like 6 months or so, I've been getting a ton of spam.
Oh, really? They had a problem which they fixed because they were giving away their cryptocurrency or a cryptocurrency they're affiliated with called Lumens.
Lumens.
And a lot of people suddenly joined Keybase trying to get Lumens. So I think they've fixed that. It seems a lot better. Keybase is an interesting story because it's free, it's open source, it has a lot of nice features, encrypted chat, but also team messaging, encrypted Git. It was originally conceived of as a way to store your crypto keys, either have them generate or, for more security, generate them yourself and store them, which I do, store your public key on Keybase, so it's a directory. And you could follow people if their key changes. You'll get a notification. There's a lot of nice features. I really like Keybase. But I think I am probably using Signal for... But I also use Keybase. And I have a number of people I chat with on Keybase. So
yeah, I just have a small group in there just to keep things private. But that's about it.
For a while, I was thinking about making it our team, instead of Slack, our team messaging. It's free.
It's free.
Yeah.
Locked down.
Yeah, it's really well designed. I'm trying to remember the guys who founded it. We were going to do an interview on triangulation, and right before we cancel it. But the guys who founded it made a lot of money in with a startup. I can't remember the name, and so now I think they're just paying back. They're paying it forward, as far as I can tell. They may have a long term monetization strategy, but there's currently no way to give them money.
Right.
So anyway, I think this is, you know, it's pretty clearly this is a better choice, and not TikTok. TikTok's right out. TSA has banned employees from using TikTok for their social media posts. Chuck Schumer actually wrote a letter to the TSA administrator saying, stop using TikTok. They'd been using it to create and post videos explaining boarding processes and rules. Why not? Why not use TikTok to help people
understand? Be safe.
Yeah, for information.
Yeah. There are people there. Yeah,
a lot of people.
Don't do it on your. Don't do it on the head of the TSA's phone.
All right.
But then again, we social media matters because we have the head of the coronavirus efforts going to Twitter to ask for help.
As he should. As he should.
Aye. Oh, yeah.
The TSA has never itself published content to TikTok or sent people to TikTok. It's just individual employees on their personal devices for their social media outreach. The Homeland Security, which houses the TSA, banned the use of TikTok from government-issued devices last month. In December, the U.S. Army banned soldiers from using the device. All this because it's the parent company, ByteDance, is in China. Although they're making attempts to move their servers out of China, and in fact, they're looking to hire an American CEO and based in Washington D.C. They're not dumb. Oh, you know, if you've got a company, even if you're in China, you try and you want to make money. You don't. It's not helpful to be seen as a spy company. I feel like both Huawei and TikTok.
Huawei seems to be doing just fine, though.
Well,
you also do what the government tells you to do.
That's the problem. So if you can, move out. But, you know,
But you can't.
And as an American, you probably shouldn't trust it. But what are you putting on TikTok? I don't know.
I just lurk on there. I have nothing to share.
But yeah, it's hard for me to imagine that I have much of value to the Chinese government.
Google Translate. Oh, let's do the changelog. Play the thing. The drums. The trumpets.
The Google changelog.
The river otter. Do something. That's river otter saxophone. Google Translate now supports, get ready for this, 5 more languages. Actually, pretty big number of people.
That's
though. Cool. 75 million people. So I can't even pronounce these languages. Kinyarwanda, Odia, Tartar, Turkmen, and Uyghur.
Nope.
75 million people. 108 languages in total. That's pretty cool. And, if you're going to the steppes, it's nice to be able to speak a little Tartar. Or is it Tartar?
No idea.
Must be saucy.
No idea.
Quick share button in Google's Chrome's toolbar. What do you think? Quickly share.
So you, because some sites, believe it or not, don't have a share button on it. So this would be on everything. Now.
I like
that. Yeah. So you see how it's like on that. This is in mobile, I guess.
So you can only share it to Google Plus.
Oh, yay. No. You can turn it on if you want, going to Chrome:// flags, search for share button in the top toolbar. Enable it, restart the browser, and you can do it yourself. This is in Chrome Canary on Android. I like that idea. This is one of the advantages where Apple has it. Well, actually, no, Android has a share sheet just like Apple.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. So
yeah.
I take it back.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. In fact, the nice thing about Android share sheet, unlike Apple's, is any developer can put their app on it. So, yeah. I like that.
That's actually one of the things when I switched to Android from Apple, that's one of the things I liked the best about it when I wanted to share things, Apple gave you this incredibly restricted group of things you could, and most of them were Apple's, of course.
So annoying. It also seems a little random, like this app, but not that app.
Yeah. So annoying.
Yeah. Yeah.
Google Stadia has 4 new games from SteamWorld. Do you know what this is, Karsten? Are you a Steam? It seems like this is something you would like. SteamWorld Dig, SteamWorld Dig 2, SteamWorld Heist, and SteamWorld Quest, The Hand of Gilgamesh. Gilgamech.
I do not know these games, but they do look interesting.
Yeah, this seems like your kind of thing.
Interesting or fun?
Both.
Okay. They are a style
of
gaming.
Does Karsten really have fun?
No.
Karsten has lots of fun.
Yeah.
He thinks tying a bow tie is fun.
Yeah.
Just to put it in perspective. These are
he has fun at the expense.
These are games in a style called Metroidvania.
Yes.
Which means they're kind of like Metroid and kind of like Castlevania. Right? 8-bit.
16-bit.
16-bit.
Lots of side-scrolling.
Side-scrollers.
Things.
All right.
Puzzles.
Whips and
whips and chains and knives.
Labyrinth design, yes.
Labyrinths. I like this kind of thing.
I
so,
have no idea what y'all just said.
Well, these are just games. You're sitting there in front of this high-end gaming laptop. You don't.
This
game.
Is not a gaming laptop.
Okay.
This is not a gaming laptop.
It's kind of like a platformer with weapons.
A platformer with weapons.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Google details its I.O. 2020 sustainability goals. I think this is so good. We've actually been looking at doing this, too. They're going to buy carbon offsets for all the attendees' air travel.
Oh, nice.
What does that cost for a...
It's like 1%.
Coast to coast flight.
It's 1%. I get mine from the Good Traveler. Let me go there right now so I could show you. In fact, we could figure it out. TheGoodTraveler.org. Let's say you're gonna let's do a coast to coast flight. Let's say you're gonna do domestic. You're gonna go from JFK to SFO, and there we go, San Francisco. I guess I have to do the JFK. Click this. And I'm going to calculate the offsets. Your trip was 5,248 miles round trip. Buy six offsets.
Oh, $2?
$2.
That's awesome.
Wow.
Actually, wait a minute.
Oh, round it up. Make it 10.
Yeah, offsets the carbon you release in 1,000 miles. So you need to buy six of them, so $12.
Oh, I see.
$12. Well, but still.
Okay. Still.
I think,
yeah, still.
You know, that's and so I've been doing that. And I just like love it.
Seems like you spent like $20 or so for your last vacation, right?
Yeah, it was cheap. And it makes you feel good. You got to pick carefully. I picked this one. It's from the Rocky Mountain Institute because the Yale School of Forestry, I read that that's what the students there use. So I figured they did the research, so I don't have to. And then there's another one. Which we're looking at for our company. So Google's doing some of this too, where you can, for a business, you can just buy offsets, which can be carbon offsets, renewable energy credits, water restoration certificates for your business. And so we're looking, Lisa and I are looking at the cost of that. It's not too expensive. And you know what? It's probably one of those things that makes you feel good. It's kind of like that social activism on Twitter.
You may be helping out somebody.
Better than nothing.
You know?
So Google's going to be doing this. They want to do zero waste, net zero emissions model. While not a perfect process, they say carbon offsetting helps. For every mile flown, we help fund high-quality offset projects that reduce emissions, like methane reclamation at landfills. That's where the money goes, by the way, to plant trees, carbon sequestration, you know, the kinds of things that would reverse the amount of carbon you put into the air. So that's good.
It's an effort.
Yep. So the venue at Shoreline has a big parking lot, but they're going to – it's a no-parking event.
They did that last year, too.
Yeah, we'll have to arrive via shuttles or public transit.
If you're press – Of course, we get
a special lot, so that's fine. I'll be driving my Hummer. I buy carbon offsets from my Hummer.
They're making electric Hummers.
Yeah, I know. I like that idea. Although, let's not forget, it's still a massive waste of resources for the metal
energy
and all the other stuff. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Local materials to create the tents for Google I/O with low invested energy, fewer virgin materials, more clean grid power. I think it's a good thing. I like seeing companies do this. I know it's not perfect, but at least they're doing something, right?
Yeah.
More sustainable I/O. Okay, Google, charge my car.
Somewhere a Tesla is having problems right now.
Assistant is adding native control for chargers and batteries for your iRobot, for a lot of anything that uses a battery. I don't know what it means, but I'm just saying it. The actions associated include starting or stopping a charge, asking about the current capacity, and checking how much time is left until something is fully charged. So that would be very handy.
I don't know. Maybe this is because I don't have an EV and not well versed on these matters, but why do I need Google Assistant to tell me to charge my car when I'm plugging a daggum thing into the car manually myself?
You don't.
Okay. All right.
You do that to impress other people. So you go in the living room and you say, okay, Google, charge my car. And then they know that you have an electric car.
And I would hope someone would look at me, dude, you were just out there.
Some chargers allow you to defer charge. Most chargers allow you to defer charging.
Okay.
So it doesn't mean that it's going to charge when you plug it in, unlike your computer, because you might want to charge it when rates are lower in the middle of the night. So a lot of cars are set to defer charging. So you might be sitting in the living room thinking, oh, crud, I forgot I have to go down to Sunnyvale tomorrow. Okay, Google, charge my car now.
See, well, this is why I ask, because I don't own an EV and I have some ignorance.
It's also valuable to know what the level of charging is before you go out to the garage. Is it fully charged? Things like that. It's not huge. Like most of the things the assistant does.
Right.
Is it sunny out?
Open the dadgum window.
Open
you can
the
see.
Dadgum window. Google Contact. Jeez. I don't understand this. Google Contacts can now find people you haven't saved to your account. Oh, so Contacts can go through...
It'll just go through your email.
Your email.
Right.
What could possibly go wrong?
Well, they're already in there.
Yeah, you might as well. I don't know if it has to be Gmail. This is not yet available, but it'll be a new an update soon, apparently. So, that's good. Okay. That list of contacts app on Android. Oh, so there is apparently, if you use Google Contacts on the web at contacts.google.com/other, a list of people that you have received email from on Gmail. I didn't know that. But you don't see that normally on Android. So the next time you get an Android Contacts update, it will see that.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Handy. I didn't even know it was.
I'm really bad at putting contacts in, so.
Yeah. Well, I always have thought of mail in general as being a database of contacts, agreements, documents, all that stuff. I hate to delete mail. But I don't use Gmail anymore, so this isn't much good to me.
I love being able to tag people, and this seems like it'd be good for the PR standpoint. The PR connects.
Yep.
So I don't want them necessarily.
No, you don't want to add. Contact. You know, I made the mistake over the years of adding PR people back when I was foolish and young. And now I have such a giant contact list.
Got to cut it.
And there's nothing older than the contact information from a PR person that's 10 years ago, right? They haven't been there in years. So, but it's fun sometimes to go through my list and see people.
I periodically look at my Google contacts and then I give up. It's like
it's too
big.
You go
into your garage and you think, I should organize some of this. But it's just, it would take weeks.
And the good news is it's just there. It doesn't take any space.
Yeah.
It's not like you look for contacts by going through your contact list.
Nope. You just type it in or yell at your phone, I'm looking for so-and-so. Yeah. Pull up. Yeah.
Google now makes the Titan security keys available across Europe. I didn't know they hadn't. I am now using Google Advanced Protection because I just feel like there is some disadvantages, but I just feel like I don't want to risk losing my Google account.
Or with a key or what?
I use a YubiKey. You have to have two keys. Just for backup in case you lose one. They recommend one be a Bluetooth. I don't do that. In fact, I just got the new YubiKeys that have both a Type-C and a Lightning connector, one on each end.
Can't you use your phone now?
Yeah. So the phone... That's another thing where the phone will pop up a pop-up saying, is that you? And you can do that with the iPhone now as well. But I also think it's handy to have a physical dongle. There it is. That's the ask the tech guy about YubiKey. You'd have to tear these keys out of my, pry them out of my cold. Go ahead, Ant, just try to take my keys.
I don't want to break your finger, sir. I like you.
And you could. You could.
Yeah, I don't know what makes people think that's so secure. Sonos speakers can now be your default playback option for Google Assistant. That's good. Google Image Search now tells you a little bit more about the results you get, including whether clicking on it's going to send you to a e-commerce site.
Logos or little icons, I mean.
Yeah. Okay. I think that's a... Yeah, see the little... There's a little tag. That's a good idea. I like that.
Yeah.
Later this week, Google Images will show new icons on desktop that provide useful information to indicate if the images lead to products, pages with products for sale, recipes...
That's useful.
Or yeah, recipes has a little fork and knife. Or video content has a little play button. Mousing over the icons expands them to show the icons with text or the length of the video. That's nice.
Yeah.
That's a good use. That makes search even more useful.
The next one is one may not be new, but I didn't know about it. So I put it in here. The old days of the anchor tag.
Yeah.
You could link directly to right in the middle of a story. Now you can put in a text snippet, and it will link directly to that text in the page.
Now, to be doing that, you have to be doing HTML?
Yeah. No, well, just when you put the...
Oh, you can do it in Markdown or Wiki or BB Edit, whatever it is that you're... BB Code, whatever you're using, I guess. If the link has... So you use... you do pound colon tilde colon text equals
wow,
and then the snippet.
That's so easy to remember.
Oh yeah, sure. I'll be doing that all the time.
How many people know what a tilde is?
It's that thing above the tick,
right?
Under the escape, over the river and through the woods.
I thought that was Heidi's dog in that
Tilda
Swedish movie. Yeah, Tilda.
Hey, Tilda. Gmail is.
I don't know. Maybe I'm confusing this, but I thought the anchor was just a bracket.
It's a hashtag.
You have to
aref and then a hashtag.
Aref. That's it. That's what I was thinking of.
Well, but see, this article is showing it using Wiki. Text.
I know what a tilde is.
Yeah, he's just everybody's just typing tildes. Yeah. Okay, so what you get is wikipedia.org/wiki/cat. That loads the cat page. But then if you do #:\text equals and then some text, it will highlight the text and go right to it. Is that only in Chrome? I guess so. Is it a W3C? So let's try it. Well, I can't because it's not. That's not. Well, let's try it. Yeah, see, it's not. They didn't do it right in their demo. It's the ChromeStatus.com. Chrome platform status, huh? WIC.
What about the next link that's down there? Wait.
Oh, should I try another link?
No, we're right there.
Yeah, senses. That one.
Well, that's the old anchor tag.
Well, that's the old anchor tag. No, is it?
Yeah, because it pulls it to this. This is a senses. Well, maybe it's not a.
Yeah.
That looks like the anchor.
Wait a second.
You know what I should do is just.
Can you look at the source?
Let me just load this.
F12.
It's not the source. Anchor tag.
It's not? So it's doing a text search of the page?
Right.
Yeah, of course, I'm not using Chrome, so. Look at the kitty cats, though. I didn't know you could go to the internet and find kitty cat pictures. Google is getting better at finding.
Midnight, all alone in the moonlight.
Gmail is catching more malicious attachments than ever before. I don't know how widely known this is, but this is a very good thing to know. If you are fortunate, as we are here at Twit, to have a good IT department and lots of security, all of our email goes through a variety of services that look for malicious attachments, chiefly ransomware. That's a big threat to any enterprise. Mm-hmm. And make sure that those attachments don't get through. So I don't have to worry so much about employees clicking attachments because it does a pretty good job. But the other thing we do is we use G Suite. That means all our mail goes through Gmail. And Gmail actually does a fantastic job of blocking malicious attachments.
Heck, spam, even.
It does a good job with spam, but it also blocks malware.
Mm-hmm.
Users of Gmail get 300 billion attachments every week.
Oh.
And they are now using AI. I suspect they've always used a little bit of AI in their spam and filtering. But this was at RSA on Tuesday. Ellie Burstein is presenting findings about how the new deep learning scanner for documents is faring against the 300 billion attachments that it has to process each week. 63% of the malicious documents it blocks each day are different than the ones its system flagged the day before. So
that's nuts.
It's not a system like that's a spam system. Yeah, it's a moving target.
Jeez.
And spam, you know, you saw spam yesterday, you block it today. This is you gotta know it's malicious now.
Man.
Apparently deep learning is very good at this. 56% of malware threats against Gmail users come from Microsoft Office documents. Only 2% from PDFs.
I thought it would have been the other way around, actually.
I think it has something to do with the fact that if you get a Microsoft Office document from someone purporting to be your boss, you're more likely to open it.
Okay, yeah.
Oh, that's that. Safe. What could go wrong there? Boss has this, you know, and here's that spreadsheet. I really want you to update this.
Yep.
You're going to update it.
Because you can't update the PDF, more than likely. Yeah.
Scanner has increased its daily malicious Office document detection by 10%. I mean, you'd like to be 100%, but it's not that easy. The scanner is particularly good at Microsoft Excel documents, and that's hard to do because apparently, according to Wired, Excel documents are complicated, difficult to assess. So, you know, even if you can't afford fancy, you know, filtering at your place of work, just using Gmail for your
it's working for you. Email. At least it's trying to work for you.
I feel pretty good. Now this one, I am going to knock on wood. We've not
the virus. Huh,
this one we have. Yeah. Now coronavirus doesn't scare me as nearly as much as ransomware. That scares me, man. Well, it should. We could be brought to our knees.
This is true.
I ask every time I see Russell, our IT guy. I say, "We're safe, right?" He said, "Yeah, we're safe." So should we train people? We're safe.
Is it safe?
It's safe. What's the frequency, Kenneth?
Wasn't that the Running Man? No.
Yeah. Marathon Man.
Is it safe?
Yeah. Laurence Olivier with the dental drill.
Yeah.
Is it safe?
I don't know what you're talking about, man. Don't drill on me, man.
Is it safe? That's my little. I don't think that's going to get pulled down on YouTube. I'm just guessing.
Yep.
That's from now on. Everything we do is going to be a dramatization of the original, so that we won't.
I think I invented that in the show.
You did.
That is my specialty.
Wait a minute. That's what's his name?
That's Gandalf.
Yeah. Why is he in this? I don't think that's where Is It Safe comes from. He's talking about the marathon man.
Olivier,
the dentist.
I remember a story, Dustin Hoffman for that movie ran around the block and didn't sleep for a couple of days
because he wanted to look
tired and sweaty.
Yeah, it
and worked. And Laurence Olivier said, you should try it as something. It's called acting.
Laurence Olivier was not a method actor.
No.
He always, he actually was crippled. I didn't know this, but I read it in his biography by paralyzing stage fright.
Wow.
Yeah. Who would have thought? One of the greatest actors of our time.
Wow.
He's not a method actor, but he said putting on the costume and putting on the makeup and or the beard or whatever the character was always the way that he. So he did. He was not a method actor, but he did do that. He got into
character. Sure. He got into character. Yeah, definitely.
He knew how to do that.
It's the war paint.
The war paint. We'll do it. And that, my friends, is the Google change log. Our show today brought to you by Health IQ. This is a life insurance agency that was tailored for people like Ant. Maybe people like you. Are you healthy? You make sure you get enough sleep every night. You exercise every day. You eat right. You understand what it takes to live healthier. Good news, you're probably going to live longer. And from the point of view of a health insurance company, that's gold. You should be paying less.
Yep.
Problem is, health insurance companies are not that smart. They use numbers. They use things like the body mass index. It's a very brute force system. What you really need is a life insurance agency that goes to bat for you, that does basically becomes a concierge. And that's what Health IQ specializes in. They specialize in the health conscious folks, the people who have been overpaying and subsidizing the less healthy people. That's how life insurance works. I mean, there's no judgment on that, but Health IQ uses science and data to secure lower life insurance rates for people like you. And I mean lower, as much as 41% lower. Mm. Something like, as an example, $1 million policy for just $36 a month. So if you're a runner, if you're a cyclist, if you're into CrossFit, if you lift like Ant does, maybe you're vegetarian or a vegan, you shouldn't be paying as much for life insurance. It's just simple. Health IQ is concierge service, white glove service. They walk you through the entire process of applying. They're working with the top 30 insurance companies in the United States. These are good policies from good, the best insurance companies. But they've negotiated rates. These are rates you can't get from anywhere else. You have to get through Health IQ because these companies know Health IQ is going to vet you and make sure that you're healthy before they even bring you to the insurance company. It all starts with a Health IQ quiz. You can do that right now if you go to healthiq.com/twig. healthiq.com/twig. It's actually pretty quick to take the quiz. And by the way, it's not a self-assessment. They're not asking about you. They're actually testing your knowledge. Do you understand what is a healthy lifestyle?
Right.
They put this together with the nation's leading medical, health, and fitness experts. And then once you take the test, depending on your score, and by the way, you can also volunteer additional information to qualify you, and then you could save up to 41% on your premiums. 41%. No commitment. You're going to learn even more about opportunities to be rewarded because you're committed to living healthy. And Health IQ wants to help you get the best life insurance money can buy. The Health IQ Concierge Service. See if you qualify. Go to healthiq.com/twig. Take the quiz. healthiq.com/twig. If you pass, you'll talk to a Health IQ concierge. They're great people. Answer their questions. They'll go to work for you and get you some great rates. Walk you through the whole process. Information's king here. healthiq.com/twig. I actually am really flattered that Health IQ came to us and said, oh, you have a healthy audience, right? Yeah, sure. But I understand that, in fact, our audience has been very responsive to these ads. We do have a healthy audience, so good on you.
That's awesome.
I do take care of yourself. That's great.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I'm not obese anymore.
Your BMI is down to 20?
I'm finally below 30.
29.4. Holy cow. Jeez Louise, what, do you stop lifting?
No, I got sick a couple weeks ago and I lost weight.
But so. 30 is the cutoff, though. You're right. Real close. Have one of those bacon bags of bacon and you're right over it.
I said, man.
This was so clever. I loved this. Damon Real and Noah Rubin, they're musicians.
Oh.
And they wanted to do a good thing for the public domain. So they generated every possible melody.
Wow.
Every possible. It's like brute forcing it. Every possible melody within an octave. And then they turned around and they put it in the Creative Commons. So
oh,
that
really?
If you're, it's a lot. They don't actually say. And by the way, these are 8-note, 12-beat melody combos. So they're not. Okay. It's not really every possible melody, but it's every. But that's a common. I'm not a musician, but I gather that that's common for music.
That's two bars. Yeah.
The algorithm they wrote generates 300,000 melodies a second. And once a work like this is committed to tangible format, they put it on a hard drive, it's copyrighted. And in MIDI format, the notes are just numbers, so they could easily fit it on a hard drive. So
is that?
Isn't that great?
The data sets has to get with these guys and start suing everyone.
No, the idea is not to sue.
Yes, just to prove how broken it is.
Yeah.
So I did see someone on Twitter, Parker Higgins, who works for Freedom of the Press and who is an expert in copyright, said that this was a great
stunt,
but that it doesn't actually mean that you can't sue for copyrighted works. I mean, he said you can't, the fact that you've simply reproduced a whole bunch of, potential
it's
melodies
not like you
doesn't
actually created
you've
them.
Copyrighted them all.
Yeah.
Matthew, although they also mentioned an algorithm going with every possible combination of words.
Right, then every article will have been written.
Yeah, exactly. No one would be able to copyright it.
It is about
they
one point.
That this was based on, or I don't know if they got the idea from, but Quinn Norton mentioned something, I think in 2006, that she came up with a conceptual prank called Quinn's Symphonic Conundrum that basically said, get a computer program to write every conceivable melody.
It's unknown really what the impact of this would be, but it's a great little hack. 1.2 terabytes, every melody possible.
Great idea.
And you can download it if you want all the melodies. I imagine most of those melodies don't sound so good.
Yeah, I would love to have a little demo of them, yeah.
No, but...
I'm downloading them. I'll play
in
them
the right hands, though. Those things could sound good. You know, the right
arrangement.
No. Some of them will just sound
There are some combination of notes that no matter Marvin Hamlish or James Brown could make it sound good.
They also didn't include notes of different durations.
So. Yeah, but you don't have to because, well, remember Ghostbusters, right? Was it Niles Rogers? Who was it wrote Ghostbusters? Got sued by Huey Lewis.
Oh,
because
yeah.
They said Ghostbusters is the same melodic combination as I Want a New Drug.
Yeah.
It isn't the
right.
same song,
right.
but that
right.
melody, right? Even if one note sustained longer or maybe yeah. the rhythm's different, the melody, the sequence of notes, and they won, by the way.
Yeah. I believe Vanilla Ice was in a similar situation, too.
He should have been.
Yeah.
That's sampling. That's another matter entirely. The article quotes a more recent case. I didn't know this, but you know Sam Smith's Stay With Me, which is a beautiful song. Tom Petty
mm-hmm. yeah.
claimed, that's my melody, that's I Won't Back Down, and eventually Smith gave mm-hmm. Petty co-writing credits and royalties, which I feel bad, because I know this song.
Do you remember what
happened
with The Verge, Bittersweet Symphony?
Yeah, for the longest time, because they sampled something.
Yeah, they sampled, I think it was an orchestral track, but it came from a Stones song. So they actually took the songwriter's name off it and put Mick Jagger and someone else on it. And then eventually...
Just a month or two ago, Mick gave it back.
Yeah, not that long ago.
Yep.
Yeah, gave it back to him.
Mick said, you know what? In fact, he gave all the royalties back, which is...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's pretty cool. That's really cool. Not that it's a great song or anything, but the beginning...
It was dumb that it even happened.
Well, it was a sample, right?
Yeah, but to take the credits off of it so that someone doesn't even get paid for it.
Yeah.
Mick certainly didn't need any more money.
Well, I'm guessing it wasn't Mick, probably. It was probably
the... No, I don't think it was him.
Usually it isn't.
The music company that holds...
The lawyers.
Yeah, the lawyers.
Usually it isn't.
It's always the lawyers. I thought that was kind of a neat story.
It is.
Did I leave anything out? Intuit's going to buy Credit Karma for $7 billion.
Oh, yeah. Oh. I didn't even know what Credit Karma did, actually. I just see the ads.
Oh, I've used it. It's great. It gives you your credit score. I want to say FICO
score. Oh, that's
score,
right. That's right. I got confused with something else. I knew what it does. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes,
and it's kind of like, you know, Intuit has Mint also, which mm-hmm. makes money by offering you better deals, you know, and stuff like that, and gives you actually a pretty darn good service. Kind of the same.
I think the hiring of Bruce Schneier by Sir Tim.
I love that. Yeah. So Schneier, who is really one of my favorite guys ever in the security
field. Go to the article. A security guru.
Go to the article and look at the caption under the photo.
Okay, well, I'm going to Schneier. It's on Schneier's blog. Is that where you're talking about?
No, the Register. The Register.
Oh, I didn't see the Register's.
Look at the
it's on the
caption
rundown.
Under the
All right, let's go back to the rundown. There's so many things in the rundown. There it is. go.theregister.co.uk.
Sir Tim Swells.
http://www.tim.berners.lee/index.html. That's the caption of the picture of TBL.
I like that.
That's
hysterical.
That guy
should get an award.
Tim always said, I never thought humans would ever see http://. That was for machines. I never intended mm-hmm. anybody to see a URL. But
let alone say it on TV.
Let alone say it on TV.
Let alone say backslash versus forward slash.
Aren't you glad that we don't have to do that anymore?
I remember in ads, people would actually say that.
http://. I fought a battle at Tech TV. Because I said, look, you're talking to geeks. You don't have to say http://.
Yeah.
And you don't have to say www.
Yeah.
And they didn't believe me for a long time. They put the full thing in there.
www is twice as long to say as World Wide Web.
Right. Good choice for an abbreviation. Anyway, so Sir Tim created something called Solid, which is actually composed of social linked data. But the notion is you have a kind of a vault with your personal data in it, which you control, and you only give that data to people who offer you something you think worth, you know, while. So because he was really concerned about, you know, privacy on the web and who controls your data. So Solid is a brilliant idea. They created a company called Inrupt. We talked about it and was kind of, I don't know how clear I was about what its plans were. But the idea is Inrupt is going to use the Solid technology to enable people to do this. How this works, I have no idea. You'd have to convince Facebook and Google to say give up everything they know about you and put it in a vault, and then they have to buy it back.
So that's going to happen.
Or they could federate.
Yeah. I mean, anyway, Bruce Schneier, who is awesome, posted a blog post on Friday saying, hey, I just want to let you know I've taken a job with Inrupt. He is going to be their chief of security architecture. He's actually been doing it since last summer. He just didn't tell anybody. I love Bruce. He's one of my favorite geeks. And now he's working on this project, which seems a long shot. But boy, if you've got people like Tim Berners-Lee and Bruce Schneier behind it, maybe. Maybe.
I mean, what has Tim done recently, though, really?
What have you done for us recently? some pretty good people are working there, but I just don't understand how you're going to convince the companies that right now their lifeblood is your data to give it up.
But you know what would be interesting? I think there's a move, pressure, I think, for people who don't necessarily want to bust Facebook or Google up. There's pressure to get them to open up, to federate data-wise, or to, you know, to make it interacting with them and getting data in and out easier. So that might be a way that they could connect. It's an open framework.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they must think that this is doable. They wouldn't be, you know, these great guys wouldn't be working on it. I hope it is. Up, up, down, down, left, right, B-A, start, has left the building.
Rest easy, my man.
The Konami code was actually an unintentional cheat code created by Kazuhisa Hashimoto. He passed away on Tuesday. He was just 61. He was working on a port in 1986 for the Konami arcade game Gradius. And he created that cheat code just for testing. He thought, well, nobody will ever figure that one out. It is an Easter egg that has been used in games ever since. And I love Konami's tweet with Kazuhisa's famous quote, up, up, down, down, left, right, B-A, start.
When I worked at the Globe and Mail, and we had the website wasn't that old, some programmers and I were talking about stuff that would be cool to do. And one of them said, I rigged up this thing where if you type in the Konami code, you get all these flashing graphics and little.
Oh, that's so cool.
Across the page. So we implemented it. And then I tweeted about it. And then someone came and told us to take it down.
What?
Because we're afraid that readers would think that we'd been hacked. Oh. So they basically said you have to uninstall it.
Oh, yeah. Man.
It was really.
I would like to write a program that calculates the wasted amount of man and woman hours people have spent typing up, up, down, down, left, right, B-A, start all the time everywhere just to see what would happen.
Just in case, yeah.
Just in case. Fortnite had it.
Yeah.
During their Black Hole event last year.
Oh, did it?
Yeah, a little special mini game. Stadia, apparently, has the Konami code on the back of the controllers.
I remember the gamer boy of the household bringing the Konami code to my attention. You know, he was just so thrilled when he found it. And I was like, yeah, that's been around since before you were born, son.
It's 1987. It was Contra, the game that made the code known. You got 30 lives instead of 3.
Yep.
When you're playing, and apparently Contra was a
game with some of the best theme music ever.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, I don't remember it. Castlevania also used it. Metal Gear, Dance Dance Revolution. It's mm-hmm. I mean, you see it everywhere: up, down, left, right,
be mm-hmm. it's a start. It's awesome.
Yeah. If you type that code on our podcast, oh, I didn't know this on our website. Patrick Delahanny's just told me you can download all of our shows for free. Unlocks Ooh. All of our shows. How many Ooh. Shows is that now, Patrick? All free. Just type it on the website, and then all that's an amazing amount of content. At one point, I think it was like several months of nonstop listening. Wow. It's just a mind-boggling. Free.
Wow. Absolutely.
Don't
free
tell anybody
too.
About that because, man, we could, that could be a problem.
Well, see, now you just opened the floodgates for Mr. Delahanty to have to watch the bandwidth.
Oh. Oh,
he's
no.
He's not going to be too happy about that.
Would you like to do, I think you should, Ant, you're going to do your last Black History Month mm-hmm. pick of the week.
Sure. It's actually two, because this one was unexpected with Miss Katherine Johnson.
Unexpected? She mm-hmm. was 101.
Yeah. 101 years well, old. She, if you don't know who she is, she was one of the key people in the Apollo mission for mathematics and helping to handle all the calculations for
the hidden figures.
Yep, the hidden figures.
Mm-hmm. If you
folks.
Haven't seen that movie yet, run.
Yeah, great yeah. movie.
Good. It is a great movie. Movie. Do not walk, run.
Taraji Henson, I think that's her name, plays her.
Mm-hmm. That movie was so inspiring.
It was.
It made me cry. It made me laugh. It was just such a great movie.
You know, you hear about a lot of that stuff, and you think about, hey, she got that job at NASA at the black-only side of NASA.
Mm-hmm. So
you know?
Sad. Well, so she had two strikes because she was also a woman.
Right.
And there's a scene where they mm-hmm. have to walk to another building because there's no women's bathroom in the building that they're yep. in.
Just yep. crazy the times.
She was the third African American to get a PhD in mathematics, graduated summa cum laude from West Virginia State with degrees in mathematics and French at the age of 18.
Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
Couldn't find a job because she was black, so she became a school teacher.
So crazy.
Did you see someone mentioned how great it was that she had carefully calculated that she would die at 101 so that she would die in her prime?
I'm glad she lived so long.
Man, rest is nice.
Now, talk about somebody who deserves a Medal of Honor. That's
indeed
amazing, mm-hmm. amazing indeed. Person. And it was because of her calculations that she was Buzz Aldrin and Neil Armstrong were able to set foot on the moon in 1969.
Yeah, Buzz said, if she said the numbers are good, then I'm going to go.
That's wow. right. She said
what
so.
What a vote of confidence, right? Because they're not doing this...
Right.
On a, you know, an HP 99A or whatever. They're doing this on a chalkboard.
Yeah, she's doing it all by hand.
Yeah, she's doing it all by hand. The chalkboards were so tall they had to climb up ladders.
Yeah.
It's fascinating and just remarkable woman. Condolences to the family, and thank you for your contributions to the community.
And a Medal of Honor winner, as she should be.
And my next one is more personal, and I wanted to ask a question to you and Mr. Jarvis, since you two are the old folks, if you will.
Hey.
All right, so we have had...
I can't play this because Aunt Pruitt will take it down.
Yeah, I'll take it down if you play it. So.
No, you can play it.
But I put up a YouTube video from my channel, and it's basically just rehashing a conversation I had with my late grandfather.
I can't play all 10 minutes. Where should I go?
Well, it's about halfway through. But okay. It's just, I want you to think about when we heard that Kobe Bryant was killed in that horrible crash with all of those other people, we felt a certain way.
You bet.
You know. Now, I want to think back to when more monumental, I hate saying it that way, people were assassinated, killed, or whatever. So think back to what you felt mm-hmm. when Kennedy was assassinated.
I'll never forget it.
You know, and what about you, mm-hmm. Mr. Jarvis? You know, what?
I was in third grade.
Can you remember that? Can you remember the feeling? And
I
just...
can remember our, I was in a friend's school, Quaker school in South Jersey in third grade.
Mm-hmm.
And the custodian for the school was a minister of a nearby African-American church who had to do that to earn money because mm-hmm. the church didn't pay enough.
So mm-hmm.
I remember him coming to the little window and looking in to tell the teacher what was happening with tears in his eyes.
Yeah.
Right.
I was same age, and I'll never forget walking down Thayer Street in Providence. I was walking home, and it was deserted, but all the stores had radios and speakers.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm walking down from store to store hearing about the assassination.
Mm-hmm.
I remember watching Lee Harvey Oswald get shot by Jack Ruby on mm-hmm. live TV. I mean, remember seeing Walter Cronkite crying. I mean, you don't, even if you're only in third grade, you don't fully understand what's going on. You don't forget that.
Right. It stuck with you. There was some type of emotion that you're never going to forget that. Now, my story with my grandfather, we talked about the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King.
Same thing. Boy, I remember in 1968 waking up.
Mm-hmm.
And Bobby had been shot, and then MLK got shot same year, 1968. Mm-hmm. Devastating. I just felt like the world was coming to an end.
And see, I'm looking at you in your eyes, and I can just see.
You never forget that.
With that news. You know, it really takes you back. When I spoke with my grandfather about this, he comes in, he says, I got home from work and I walked in the house to tell my grandmother, hey, and instead of saying, did you hear about the news about Dr. King getting shot? He walks in and he says, they finally got him.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard this story from so many African Americans because you knew it was going to happen. Even King knew it was going to happen.
And I'm like, man, just...
You knew immediately, right?
Yep. What thought process so is sad. That to say, okay, they finally got him. You know, that was the way he and my grandparent, my elders was just living. That was the life.
That was the life.
Of the 60s. And I'm so glad we don't have to deal with that type of environment anymore. But I just wanted to, just raise awareness about that. And we got to continue to do good. And, if you want to go watch that video, go watch it.
Good.
It's there.
Good.
It's just a different perspective,
I'm so glad you made this. It's called Finally Got Him. I'm so glad you made this. This is Ant's personal channel on YouTube, Create and Dominate, youtube.com/, is it / Ant Pruitt?
That's it.
Pruitt.
I made that video pretty much like a year ago to the day.
Wow.
It was right about this time.
Wow.
But thank you for watching it.
Yeah, thank you for making that. I think that's great. Jeff Jarvis, a number, sir?
So this is a whole mess of numbers. The Andreessen Horowitz put out an analysis they call the Marketplace 100 of online marketplaces. And they got the gross merchandise value from anonymized credit card receipts from a source called Second Measure. And they came up with 100. And it's amazing, the list.
These are 100 what, biggest?
Airbnb, DoorDash, Instacart, Postmates.
Yeah, I see them, but Poshmark. What are they? 100 what?
They're online marketplaces.
Grid. Like based on volume?
Based on the, I just said this a minute ago. You got to listen to this. The gross merchandise value.
How what much does that even freaking mean? You mean how much people spend with
them? Companies on this list will then rank using a common industry metric, which is extrapolated from how many total dollars consumers are spending against each company. This provides an approximate measure of a marketplace's scale and its importance in the economy. Now, mind you, it says here, by the way, that these things are becoming so important now. Ride-sharing platforms alone account for roughly 1% of U.S. household income. There are an estimated 75 million gig workers in the U.S. That's what this is about. Now, what's amazing is the first four, Airbnb, DoorDash, Instacart, and Postmates, account for 3/4 of the revenue, 76%.
So this is in dollars spent, or is
dollars
it a percentage
spent.
Of
dollars
the total?
Spent.
It's just dollars raw spent. Dollars spent.
I believe so. They could have said that simpler, yes.
It sounds like it's a different statistical thing.
Well, see if you read it differently.
Yeah.
Above that.
It's not, I feel like it's not, let me see.
The top three are gigs.
The companies on this list were then ranked using a common industry metric, gross merchandise value. So they turned to data, anonymized aggregated U.S. consumer spending data captured via credit cards, debit cards,
but
and bank credits.
Why is each of these in a... Oh, no, they're not. There's just different categories. The categories are irrelevant.
Descriptive, yes.
Okay.
So they got the methodology all there. What's striking is all these I've never heard of.
This would be more valuable if they put a number next to it, so I would
It really
know
would be. If you go down lower, you start to see the breakdown. But tons of these things, Rover, ClassPass, Zola, Turo, Spot Hero, Goat. I've never heard of these. Mm-hmm. And they're the top 100 for what is becoming a huge segment of the economy.
See, this it's this That's thing gross crazy. Market value that I don't
Spot
know.
Hero I don't understand really either.
Huh? What, Matthew?
Spot Hero is useful.
Okay.
So, okay.
They each count for 1/3 of all spots. Gross market value in the category. So it's by cat. So what it's saying, I think, is how dominant any individual company is in its category. So Airbnb has the largest share of the travel market of any company.
Two and four, DoorDash and Postmates, are both in the food and beverage category. So it's not the largest.
Well, DoorDash
is largest relevant. I know, yeah, it's confusing.
Yeah, I don't think they're saying that Airbnb is related in any way to DoorDash. The comparison is their percentage of their category.
Right.
Is what I think I'm understanding, which is a very complicated, weird thing. So Airbnb owns 58% of this, all the spending, all the market value in travel. DoorDash owns 57% of all the market value in food and beverage, like that. And actually, it's 30. The numbers are 38%.
Airbnb is 38, DoorDash 17, Instacart 15. Boom, you got it. Postmates 6, and then it goes into a long tail.
Still pretty high.
Which is to say that in that, you know, against Postmates, it's a top four marketplace. It only has 6% of its category. Then there's a lot more. Well, No. Actually, no. Take that back down, Leo. No. 38, 17, 15, and 6. Does that up to 76?
Yeah. They're in different categories. That's what I'm so different confused categories. What this is. I don't... what's GMV?
Numbers. I didn't say what I was going to mean.
Some sort of GMV is something that economist... The fastest growing marketplace categories are celebrity engagement. What?
I know. I don't know what that means.
Instagram.
I think this is a joke.
It's unreasonable.
I'd like to understand a little more. I'll have to read this more closely.
Yeah, I should have.
What is a marketplace company? Yeah, it's interesting.
What's GOAT?
I don't know.
I know it means greatest of all time.
Yeah. I know.
These numbers are hurting my head, Jeff.
Thanks a lot, Jeff. For a number, you know. And by the way, this whole number thing was accidental.
How did you get something
at the end of the show?
You don't have to do a number.
You said, "Oh, Jeff, you can come up with a number every week." It's actually a pain in the ass.
A little rebellion.
Number. What am I doing okay. for a number? I spent an hour looking around
really?
For friggin' numbers.
You
by the
come
way,
up
goat
with a number every. That's your job.
Get ready for this
every show.
Goat, which is one of the four fastest growing companies by year-over-year relative growth, is a peer-to-peer marketplace for buying and selling authenticated streetwear and sneakers. You Hope should have known used. That, Matthew. If you wanted
Obviously,
to get your Yeezy
that.
Boost 350 V2 Earth. You would go to GOAT.
Can you say that shoe description again?
That's the Yeezy Boost. Already, you know that? So the 350 V2 Earth? You know that. I see you wearing Yeezy Boosts all the time. Here's the Rui Hachimura edit. This is
Yeezys.
This is, you know what, Jeff? What you have brought us is a world, a whole new world that I don't even
Kanye
understand.
That's my point.
Yeah,
that's my point. All this stuff, you can go buy things. People are buying it. I've never heard of this. Some of these. Mm.
Are you
it's
fair?
You're old.
Are you
wholesale official without the hassle?
Pick. Okay, how much do you think it would cost for a Yeezy Boost? Oh, they're not that bad. $320. They're cheap.
I was figuring at least $200, but
well, it depends on the size. If you're a four, it's cheap. Let's see. I'm a nine. $345. That's not too bad.
That's crazy.
Oh, wait a minute. Buy new with defects?
That's asinine. What?
$530. I guess they're more expensive if they have imperfections.
Nope.
And then apparently the used ones are completely sold out. I don't understand.
Yeah, because they're cheaper. They're $100 cheaper used.
That's an ugly ass sneaker. Would you wear that?
Negative.
That looks like a looks like a lizard.
Nope.
Nope.
Nope. That's the Easy Boost Marsh.
I think that's what Neil Armstrong and Buzz wore.
Oh, I know what this category
it's
is.
It's a Yeezy supply thing. Yeah.
It's book a personalized video message from a celebrity.
Okay. Those are very popular.
Debbie Gibson, $150. Michael Rappaport, $150.
Leo Laporte, $2.50.
Larry Thomas, the soup Nazi, $60.
What? Really?
Yeah, everybody's doing
Jim O'Hare from Parks and Recreation, $135.
Oh, I'd pay a lot of money. Get Ron Swanson.
Guess Gilbert Gottfried. Gilbert? How much does it cost?
$1,000.
Gilbert Gottfried.
How?
$150.
It's cheap.
Oh, bless his heart.
Cheap.
What? Sad.
Sad.
Come on.
The saddest thing ever, I bought the guy who did You've Got Mail.
No.
Was selling. And I bought, it wasn't too expensive. You've Got Mail, you twit. I wish I could find that.
Wow.
Durwood, his name was Durwood something. And he was selling that online. Literally, he didn't live long enough for this. Maybe he's still alive. I shouldn't say that. Mm-hmm. I think he's probably not. For the celebrity marketplace, he could really cash in now.
Wow.
Somebody got used that service and got a guy from an 80s or 90s boy band to break up with his girlfriend, I think.
Wow.
This is sad. So this is a category.
So like Kim Kardashian expensive? How much did you pay for that?
Gilbert.
Or possibly give you a kidney at the right price.
Nice.
Gilbert got
somebody came up with this, and it's an industry. It's a friggin' industry now.
Well, yeah. But I guess Gilbert probably goes in the studio, records 10 of them. He just made $1,500 bucks,
and he's
right?
done. Boom. Easy cash.
Easy then cash. He goes and buys some Yeezys.
The problem, that's a Yeezy right there. That's just the left Yeezy. The problem with it is you're going to throw your voice out because the temptation is, well, you're not going to do 10. If I'm going to do 10, I might do 100. That's a lot more money, right?
Yeah, right.
Maybe I'll do 200.
I presume there's another use for your voice these days. You, nobody, yes. Gilbert, nobody, I don't know.
Nobody would pay for my voice.
Sure they would.
But remember, that was the prize on Wait, Don't Tell Me? Was the to get him to record your voice machine?
Wait, that's don't it. Tell me.
That was the prize.
How old is
they
that?
Had the great announcer. No, it's not that old. It's still on, but the announcer died.
It's NPR.
Yeah, NPR. He passed away, but Carl Castle. To get Carl Castle to do your voice machine.
Hello, this is Carl Castle.
I only watched that or listened to it once because Alonzo Bowden was on it. Wait, don't tell me. The comedian, Alonzo Bowden.
Who was the famous announcer on Laugh-In? And was it Don Pardo?
Gary Owens.
Don Pardo.
This is Gary Owens speaking.
Gary Owens, right.
Live from Burbank.
If you buy one Gilbert, you get one Leo free.
Yes.
Do you have anything
Leo DiCaprio.
You would like to pick, Matthew, or mention? You don't have to. I'm asking. I don't want to leave you out.
So I was going to pick the guys who programmed like every possible melody, but you guys already used that one.
I stole it.
But I did find one that I thought was amusing, but also disturbing.
Yeah.
So do you remember there was an NSA program where they could basically record phone calls and
everything,
texts and capture them and when they were searching for terrorists? So this program cost $100 million between 2015 and 2019. And they just admitted that they got a single useful piece of information out of that program. One?
This whole time they were saying, you have no idea how valuable this is in fighting terrorism.
One.
But we won't tell you, but you have no idea. Apparently it's not.
A single one. $100 million. Yeah.
But now they have all the recordings. So now they got to pay to store.
Okay, Google.
Jeez.
Yeah, they sold them to Google. Sorry.
Yeah. And here, finally, my pick. The Smithsonian has just announced that they are going to put They're going to digitize much of their collection, put images, recordings, all sorts of stuff from the Smithsonian
millions
of them in the public domain. 19 museums, 9 research centers, libraries, archives, the National Zoo. If you're looking for, and they even have remixes. This is why you put stuff in the public domain, because of the way people can use it and have fun with it. All these images, all fun stuff, completely free, open source.
2.8 million? Oh, my media matters.
And they're adding more, too.
They're constantly digitizing. This is our tax dollars at work. This is great. We do own this.
Yeah, this was announced a month or so ago, I believe.
I just saw the story.
It's been a little while.
So good.
It's good stuff.
Look at that one. Honor King and Racism. This is a poster carried in the 1968 Memphis March.
Outstanding.
Isn't that great? So I thought I'd mention that, and you can find it at si.edu, the Smithsonian Institution, si.edu/open access. Ladies and gentlemen, I think we should wrap this up, because there's nothing better than going down to San Francisco and catching the coronavirus from a bunch of hopped-up techies.
Well, there is. They just announced there's a case in Northern California. So don't... these guys are going to be on the air live 24 hours a day for the next 14 days.
Actually, that's a good idea. We'll lock ourselves in this studio and quarantine.
Ant looks scared.
Yeah.
You don't want to do that, Ant? You don't have to.
I'm trying to find a corner I could sleep in.
We don't mean to laugh at the ailment and the danger, what are you going to do?
What are you going to do? You're going to wear a mask.
Yeah.
You're going to sanitize.
Someone's been transported to Sonoma County Hospital here.
What? Here?
Sonoma County Hospital. Uh-oh. That's not far from here, right?
Yeah. This is Sonoma County. Okay. So I guess it's okay to go to San Francisco. We do this show. I'm fine. It's going to be fun. I can't wait. Thank you, Matthew Ingram, for joining me. Matthew, I didn't mention this at the very beginning of the show, and I should have, is chief digital writer at the... Columbia Journalism Review, CJR.org. Always a pleasure.
Indeed.
Thank you, Matthew.
Thanks for having me.
Jeff Jarvis, professor of journalism at the Town Knight Center of the Craig Newmark Graduate School of Journalism at the City University of New York.
Take a breath.
Thank you so much for being here, Jeffrey. He's also blogging at buzzmachine.com, and he's at Jeff Jarvis on the Twitter. Thank you so much, Aunt Pruitt, for walking down the hall today. We love having you on the show. Really appreciate it. Watch Hants on Photography.
Come on, man.
Hants on Photography. Hants' new show, Hands on Photography. It's at twit.tv/hop. Lots of great photo information, and getting better all the time. So thank you.
Looking forward to this week's show. Going to dive into some feedback, because we've been getting a lot of good feedback in the twit community. So if you haven't joined that, go ahead and join now. And I want to show some of those folks some love.
Thanks for using that, actually. That's great. That's our Twit forums at twit.community, www.twit.community. And there's also a Twitter clone. The Mastodon instance is twit.social, and you're welcome in both spots. Those are free. We also have a great chat room at irc.twit.tv. The people who hang out there are mostly people watching live. We do this show every Wednesday, 1:30 Pacific, 4:30 Eastern, 21:30 UTC. You can stream it live, audio or video, at twit.tv/live. If you're not around to watch live, you can always listen or watch on demand by going to the website, twit.tv/twig. Or, best thing to do, get your favorite podcast application, search for This Week in Google, download it, and enjoy it. Have a wonderful Stroopwafel. We'll see you next time on This Week in Google. Bye-bye, everybody.